Now move on.
Blog Talk Radio.
Now they start speaking against you openly in the streets. Somebody gets their courage up. Somebody who has nothing to lose. And the thing they were saying behind closed doors, they start speaking against you public now. Next, they start violating your rights, your human rights. You can't live here. You can't go there. Then they start exercising superior rights to you. That's what Paula Deen did. She just exercised superior rights, where they take it to the media, and the media, the newspapers, the television stations, the radio stations, they begin to echo the masses are saying. They begin talking what used to be hid behind closed doors. Now they begin saying it themselves. You thought it was hidden, but it wasn't. Now they're speaking against you openly and in public and getting away with it. After you told everybody that something like that simply couldn't happen. Let me tell you all something. There was a wonderful documentary the History Channel done called The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. And in that documentary, they document that there were many Jews who were in Germany at the time, assure their fellow Jews that Adolf Hitler was just peachy-keen. There was nothing to worry about. Those people were just outliers. Times have changed. Drink up and be merry. What do we have to be angry about? What do we have to be upset about? We can still go buy a BMW. We can still go buy a Mercedes. Okay, so there's some people who don't like us. So what? So what? They call us Juden. The same thing that was happening as Adolf Hitler began to rise. That was exactly what was going on then. And isn't it amazing that you hear the exact same thing now among black people? You hear the exact same thing. We as black people have learned nothing from the lessons of history. They say that Santayana said those who do not learn from their history are doomed to repeat it. I want to make a slight correction. Slight correction that. Those who do not learn from their history are doomed to repeat their history until they are annihilated. And to the young people listening today, you have been born and bred to be cowards, born and bred to kowtow, born and bred to bow down and beg. And I'm telling you right now that's not a formula for survival. You think it's going to be a formula for survival in poverty, and this you've been reduced to thinking your life was meant to be surviving in poverty. I'm telling you that's neither a formula for surviving nor a formula for surviving in poverty. That is a formula for sitting quietly until it is your turn to march off to the electric chair, until it's your turn to be marched off to the death chamber. That is. To everyone who's listening now, we're going to go ahead and open up the phone lines. So definitely this will be your opportunity to call in and speak. The Black is Radio program in existence, the only one on planet Earth today. And it's your chance to be heard, especially if you're young people. People are always asking. People always want to wait until the last 2 hours of the broadcast. I'm just going to tell you right now. The time to call into this broadcast is early, because I can give more time at the beginning of the broadcast. If you wait, like most people do, until the second and third hours, and then 20 and 30 people flood the board, I can't get to everybody quickly, or at least I can get to them as quickly as I'd like, and I got to just run through calls. So if you're one of those people who's been saying that you want to speak to me for an extended period of time, if you're one of those people who want an extended period of time to be able to make your points, this is the time to be calling right now. The time. Because you never know when I might get frustrated and just say, you know what, forget it, I'm done for the night. Because I do that also. So, this is your time to chime. The telephone number is 646-787-1933, 646-787-1933, for personal access code to the Blackest Radio Program in existence, the only one of its kind, planet Earth today. And welcome you to the blackchannel.net radio. Telelines are open. Caller from the 517. You're on live with the blackchannel.net radio.
Hello?
Yes, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name is Jamal, calling from Lansing, Michigan.
What's on mind, brother?
Not much. I just want to call and say that I respect what you do. I appreciate the show. It's people like you, and I don't know if you know who David Carroll is, but it's people like you guys that are truly making a difference in the community. I think that what you guys are doing is very, very positive, and you just got to keep doing what you do.
Well, I thank you for the comments there, brother. There's no one who does what I do, with the exception of Dr. Anderson. There's no one who does what I do. There are people out there who do things, and I'm not going to down anybody else, but in honesty, there's nobody who stands by it like I do. If you go through all videos and stuff, you'll find inconsistencies all over the place. You will not find that with me. So just in all honesty, stop looking at people as entertainment. Now, you said something at the beginning of the call here, and a lot of people wished when you said it, and there's a reason why they did that. You said, I love the show. Mm-hmm. The place will make a very, very big distinction here. This is not a show. This is a broadcast. It's a program. It's not a show. What Steve Harvey does is a show. What Oprah Winfrey does is a show. What I do is broadcast. I'm not interested in entertaining people or anything like that, so I make a very clear distinction here. Furthermore, I'm not interested in entertainment. I'm interested in enlightenment, and that's why I have to stick by principles. Most other people don't have principles like that. They say what they think it is necessary to get your attention. Next time you're listening to somebody, when they say something, just find out if you can live your life by it and see how that works out for you. But that's a very clear distinction that needs to be made. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not trying to downplay what you do. Listening to the show yesterday, I know it's not entertainment. You know, what you do is more. I think it's more of an informational type thing. It's just ingrained in my mind to call. You know, when I'm thinking about these types of things, just call this show. But it wasn't to downgrade anything that you're doing. But if you
are you friends? Are you linked up on Facebook or Twitter or anything like that?
Oh, no, I do not do social media. This is my first time calling. I found out about you just from watching various different YouTube videos. I used to listen to you a lot on Sotomayor, but I knew about you before Sotomayor. But every time you was on Sotomayor, I always made a point to listen because, what Sotomayor does is entertainment, but you used to bring something a little bit extra to this. I'm going to say it because that's what he has. He has a show. You used to bring a little bit something extra to it. And I like listening to your message. I think that you have a very positive message, and I just respect what people like you are doing.
Well, here's what I want you to do for us, okay? Because it's not in for everybody to go have rah rah and we like this and like that. And I'm not downing anybody. Other people do what they do, okay? I pulled up a post last night where I made the point that, you know, CNN had been doing, quote, cable news for 20 years. And the board just exploded here. That didn't take very long. CNN was doing cable news for 20 years before Fox came along. And Fox came and dominated the landscape. Why? Because even though MSNBC had started before Fox, MSNBC was not doing anything special. They weren't doing anything different. Fox is a right-wing propaganda mill that doesn't even really qualify as news, but the point is, Fox was not doing what CNN does. They were doing something totally different, and they dominated the market. MSNBC tried to switch gears, become more like Fox, conservatives and whatnot, and we're going to be fair and balanced, and their ratings stank. There's a wonderful documentary called Out Fox, one of the producers of the Donny Show, when it was on MSNBC, spoke about that it gave them an edict that said every liberal that you had on, you had to have a conservative, so it would be fair and balanced. And he said they were trying to outfox Fox, and you can't outfox Fox. In other words, you can't be Mike Fox and Foxes. Why would people want to have a watered-down version of Fox when they can go get a real thing? That was the point he was trying to make. MSNBC did not become successful against Fox until Keith Olbermann. Well, Keith Olbermann went to the left. CNN, we're in the middle. Fox said, we're right. MSNBC said, hey, there's nowhere to go but left. And Keith went that way, and MSNBC has been spanking CNN ever since. And in the key demographics, every once in a while, they spank Fox. But that never would have happened if they had kept to be like them. So in my case here, other people have what they do, and I think it's good that everybody has their own way of doing things, okay? I don't do what Tariq does. Tariq talks about serious issues, too, but I don't do what Tariq does. I don't do it the way Tariq does it.
It's different.
Yeah, and I think that's okay, too. Don't get me wrong. I think that's okay, too. I just don't want you listening to somebody who's, you know, lying to you or being hypocritical or anything like that and messing up stuff. So what I'm saying is that all these other people have their way of doing it. I'm going to trust adults to be adults, okay?
Yeah.
I'm going to trust everybody out there. If I tell you that somebody's putting wool over your eyes and messing you over, it's not going to help me to tell you. If I have to tell you that Paul Dean is a problem, it's not going to help me to tell you. If I have to convince you that this woman is racist, I'm wasting the breath of life by trying to convince you. So we're just going to skip past that altogether. But what I want you to do here, because you need to stay abreast, and it's not enough for just everybody to say, I love what you're doing here, and this is wonderful, and I wish we could do more. Get off your ass and let's start doing it, okay? Well, what can I do? What you can do is get your Twitter account. Get you a Facebook. You don't have to post up nothing if you don't want to. That's perfectly fine. But you need to be in the arena where we know where you are. It's not enough for you to be up there in Michigan just doing your thing. Doing your thing ain't helping us. Take a look at the emergency financial laws that you have in Michigan right now. Who did they immediately go after? They went after Big Harbor. They went after Detroit. Next, they're going to go after Lansing if they haven't already.
Yeah.
Now, you know that for a fact. They're going to say, oh, niggas is poor. We're going to get you before you bankrupt. And there goes democracy. So what I'm saying is get on one of those networks somewhere so that you can stay abreast with us, interact with us, so that you can be on the cutting edge of these things. You just out there flying solo, going, you know, rogue by yourself, and you're on commando on your own, and just doing your own thing, that all that renegade stuff is not helping us. So what I'm telling you is I'm going to do the opposite of what anybody else you've ever called them or said. I want you to get into the arena with us. You don't have to do a bunch of other stuff. Get in here. Get where we know where you are so we know where to find you. And where you need to find us. On Facebook, you can find me at The Black Authority or Jason Black, whichever. You can find me on Twitter at The Black Channel. And I want you to be there so you can join with us because we can make a community out of this diaspora if we really want to. But we can't make a community out of people we don't know where they are. So get someplace where we can find you. You know I am. If I got to be the spirit point, so be it. You know where I'm at, find me. You can say, hey, this is David Lansing. Okay, we know where he is.
You're right. I'll get me a Twitter account going, but I don't really post that much. But
doesn't post anything. Just follow me. If I'm the only person you're following, that's cool. Check Twitter once a day. You don't do anything else. Just take it once and see if I put up something. I guarantee I'll put up three or four things a day. Just check it and see. I give you an update on the documentary. If I give you an update on contributions. If I give you an update on city. If I give you an update on status. You know, or if you got something that you want to communicate me. I don't have to repost everything, but if it's something important, you can communicate to me. That way you're not sitting out there in a vacuum, man. If you start hearing rumblings that, hey, there's some dudes came down here from the state and they're talking about emergency finance in Lansing. I'm an emergency finance manager in Lansing, man. The national media is not talking about this. The national media is not going to say anything until y'all have installed. But when you first start in the rumblings, don't just be sit up there in Lansing, Paul Revere, and get the message out to your people. that, hey, there's trouble up here in Lansing. The white media is not saying nothing about this. There's trouble up here. Let me get my people and let them know what's going on.
Yeah. The same, you know, more problems in you know, in Detroit and Flint too. You know, I'm actually from Flint. You know, I moved here, yeah. But you know, that's where the real problems are.
Well, you say real problems, but understand the word "real" is going to be defined by Rick Snyder. That's who real is now. He defines what is real and what is not real. And a place like Lansing that you think is okay, you let Whirlpool wants to take Benton Harbor, they got that. Big Three wants to take over Detroit, they got that. Let whoever your largest employer is in Lansing decide that he doesn't have enough power to get done when he wants to get done, and all of a sudden you are going to start becoming a real problem too. Because Benton Harbor didn't think they were a real problem until Whirlpool said they were.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for joining us, brother, and link up with us. Let us know if you get an account either way, here it goes, and then reach out to me so at least we know where you are. Don't just be out there on your own anymore. We got to start being together. You and me and us, and we are all we got. Calling us in here, David. Phone lines just exploded up in here, so I guess some took me seriously on that, and I'm very glad to hear that. That caller from the 901, you're on live with the BlackChannel.net radio program.
Hello.
Hello, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Las Vegas.
All right, my name?
Amelia.
You Camellia?
Amelia.
Amelia. Name sounds familiar. Yep. Hello, Amelia.
Hi.
I don't know very many Amelia, but I know
Amelia,
one.
I'm Amelia, Electra Amelia. Electra Amelia.
I just know one Amelia. And how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
What are you doing hanging with us black bald radicals over here?
I can appreciate a lot of the things that you do and say to help people, and I am black.
That definitely helps, but not necessarily a requirement. By the way, I just wanted to make this point right quick because there were people who were under a misconception. I non-black list as well, and I have absolutely no problem with that. First of all, I can't keep them from listening. Second of all, even if I could, I wouldn't. If I had to switch this said black folk only, I would not do that. I would not do that because people need to understand. They need to understand. Like you need to understand. It's today. The old step and fetch, it's Sambo dancing a jig. It's over. That's over. There's a lot of Negroes still subscribing to that, but understand there's something underway here. And you need to get on board the train. The homosexuals did not say, we're going to go gay rights and nobody's going to hear about it but us. They say we're going to go for it and the world is going to hear us. Well, there you go. What's on your mind, sister?
Nothing much. I was just calling in support of the show. I didn't want anything in particular. You hadn't gotten to a good point. I was hoping that by the time that you got to my call, I would have something worthy to say or have more of a comment to make. But I guess maybe make me nervous or something. I don't know.
And you spent so much time wanting to talk to me, too, as a matter of fact. She spent so much time wanting to speak to me, and they finally spoke to me and was like, I don't have much to say, actually. I don't know what to tell you. But boy, put in a chat room, and she will type up a thunderstorm. Let me tell you, she will type up a cyclone in there.
Yeah, that's how introverts are, I guess.
I'm an introvert, too. Believe it or not, I'm not a very outgoing person. If I could get my groceries by reaching outside my room window, I'd do it. I'd do it without thinking. But unfortunately, nobody's going to do that, so here we are. I hope we can count your support for the documentary. We're going to have some information about that coming out here in the next day or so.
Okay, well, yeah, I want to make a comment about your little post you've been posting on Facebook about getting in shape. kind of inspired me. I just went and bought me a really nice exercise bike the other day. Not that I'm overweight. I'm like about 3, 4, or 5 pounds I need to lose, but sometimes I just look at it like I need to get up and do something. So,
you know, you are kind of scrawny, though, but in your case, I would recommend weight training instead because you're not like
No, actually, my muscle mass is very high. Like, when I go to the doctor and they measure me, like, they measure my thighs a few weeks ago, they were like, do you work out? Because most people's muscles aren't even on both sides or whatever. But mine were. I just need to, probably tone up a little more. But
okay, about to say, because now that you disputed me, now you need to send us a picture so we can see it, because we can all see your bright man face. You just can't see the rest of this supposed toned body here. So, let's get out those muscles.
If you just give me, it only takes me like a month or two. That's all I need. I make sure I don't get out of shape. Because, like, you know what? Like, it really bothers me that, though. I try to tell my cousins and my friends all the time. They're always like, I want to get a big butt. And I'm like, if your stomach grows at the same rate that your behind grows, why do you want a big stomach? Why do you want to walk around here with a butt and then you're going to die because, like, your BMI is so high? Like, that is the most disgusting thing that people want to be thick.
They tell themselves that the only body parts a man cares about are my breasts and my behind. And so they take the layaway of everything, and that's why they're all sitting around cheeseburgers. And, well, that's the only thing a man notices. Well, the problem is they grow up around a bunch of broke, dusty Negroes. And because of that, these Negroes can't do any better, so he's just going to take whatever he can get. Well, if I can get some breasts and if I can get some behind, then I'm okay because I can't really rate high enough to get anything better than that. And that's where it comes from. So these females are shooting for the lowest kind of denominator, because they're lazy, and males aren't demanding more because the males are the low common denominator, and a change of environment helps fix those things.
And you know what else? If I date a guy who, I don't like really skinny men, I'm just going to be honest, but like when I date a guy, I look at him like, is he going to be expensive on my insurance? Is he going to cost me a lot of money? Is he going to die before me? Like, because I'm looking at him like, if I have kids by him, are my kids going to be built like that? It's like all this crazy stuff comes up in my head when thinking about, like, bigness and all the terrible side effects of being that big are. It's just horrible. Like, I have, like, huge people on my dad's side of the family, some women that are big, and it's like, I'm not going to be like them. Because I know genetically I'm probably predisposed to it, but I just try to take care of myself so I won't be like that.
Well, it's 4 months till June. Now, you said you need 1 month, which means I expect
I don't really even need that long.
Oh, good. So you're going to be before and after.
Yeah, I burn off. The doctor told me a few months ago, he was like, that I burn off more calories than the average woman because I'm like 5'9", and I have a lot of muscle mass. So I guess something with that, I got on this little thing, and he measured me, and he was like, I was lucky. So I guess my sitting at a computer all day, the reason why I'm not big, Terry, is because of some whatever in my body that allows me to burn off.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. That means that you'd be my before and after April. Right?
You know what? If I did a goal, I'm a goal setter. So if I did set a goal,
okay.
Like
well,
that,
let's hear your goal then. Bellies up to the bar and let's see.
I would need to lose.
Bellies
I was at the doctor again. I always check on my weight, and I guess I need to lose. My goal was 7 pounds.
Okay, well, I'm not about 7 pounds. You said muscle tone.
Oh, I can get that. That's easy. That comes so easily.
Okay, and surely in 34 days, you give us a before after.
Okay.
All right. I expect to be seeing that. And if I don't, I'm going to be talking to you.
Okay.
I might even make a video. This is Amelia. This is Amelia looked like in February of 2014. This is what Amelia looks like in April of 2014. See any difference? Neither did we. We asked Amelia about this, but she's moved from Las Vegas to the Bermuda Triangle.
Okay. All right, I'll do it. I will write that down and make it happen.
I'll be expecting to hear it. If you need a personal trainer, just let me know. I'll find you one.
I'll be fine. I'll just make sure I get just do really good stuff in the house. So
okay.
That should be fine.
Well,
yep.
In the meantime, like I said, because I already get pictures off Facebook if I need to, but I will give you the opportunity to do your own before picture, and where you can compare it to before and after picture, and give yourself something to be proud of, and start being a role model and that kind of thing. Because we think of ourselves that
okay.
way, but
cool.
the truth is, we all have the opportunity. There's something we can do. Maybe you can host a radio broadcast. Maybe all you can do is work the camera. Maybe all you can do is work the website. Maybe all you can do is be in shape. But whatever you can do, do it to the best of your ability, and make sure that you're hooked up with your people also. I'll let you have the last word.
Thanks for the goal that I have. I always need something to do. So, yeah, that's cool. That'll be nice for me. So,
we'll be watching, sister. Black first. You take care.
I was hoping I would get some drama in the middle of the call, but unfortunately I didn't.
Some drama? No.
I didn't mean that kind of drama. I mean like a good conversation about something substantive, but I couldn't. So.
Okay. Well, as they say in vaudeville, I'll be here all week.
Okay. Okay. All right, have a great evening.
Check back with us. This is the Black Talent Net Radio. A lot of smart people here because they call in early, which is exactly what you need to do. It gives you the greatest amount of time to be able to talk with me and whatnot, and to be able to talk to people because you do want to have the opportunity to speak with them. I want you to have the opportunity to speak with them and to be heard as well. Caller from the 210, you're live with the Black Talent Net Radio.
Hello?
You're on live.
Hello?
Close the door.
All right. good evening, Mr. Black. Black first. My name is Anthony. I'm calling from San Antonio.
What's on your mind, black man?
All right. Okay. Well, first time caller. I discovered you about a month ago. A few things I wanted to get off. You have to start with because I know you have a lot to discuss on. When you began the broadcast this evening, you were talking about how our parents and our grandparents have pretty much failed us and our generation as far as providing a legacy for us to inherit. And I can kind of see what you're talking about as far as like our parents, as far as our grandparents, though. I'm not sure if I could necessarily agree, or maybe if you could
Why are you not sure you can agree?
Well, the thing I figure is like what our grandparents faced versus what our parents faced.
Okay, tell me like, what our grandparents faced, because I'm asking the same question over and over again. You said I'm not sure. It's because of what they faced. Explain to me exactly why you are giving them a pass. What have you seen or what have you heard that leads you to believe that their circumstances are so radically different from yours?
Okay. Let's see. Well, if I were to go around that route, I'd have to go like facing what my grandparents faced, like say in the 30s and the 40s. If you look at in terms of Jim Crow, like actual segregation laws, actual active Klansmen and lynchings that were going on in the country openly with very little to none federal enforcement. We didn't have any protection laws and we didn't have any civil rights of any kind, even if you think about it in terms of how effective it actually the laws that came about were they at least gave us some opportunity to work and prosper versus when our parents came up. I'm giving my parents as an example. My parents came up in the 60s and the 70s.
Brother, are you doing a workout out there or something? Are you jogging?
I'm actually. I just ran outside. I just got finished walking the dog. I'm sorry, sir.
Okay, because you were breathing all heavy and stuff. I was like, either he is jogging or he's chopping wood or something. But okay, I think I pretty much got your point here. All right.
Okay.
Well, let's deal with a couple of modern
babbling.
Well, let's deal with a couple of common misconceptions here first, all right? The problem is that too often we are willing to allow our forebears and elders to lie to us. When I ask you what was it that you saw or had heard that led you to want to give them a pass, you couldn't actually answer the question. What you came up with were a bunch of historical anecdotes. Now, Jim Rowe goes back basically to deduction. If you really want to be, if you really want to be, okay, but dude, the Civil War was over by the time you want to start counting genuine Jim Crow. You're really coming right off the 1860s. So what I'm saying is that if you're going to spot them 40 years, you're going to spot them 30 years before the turn of the 20th century, you just spot them that 30 years and say, well, we'll spot you this too. That's what I'm trying to get you to understand, because your parents and grandparents will become 20th century. You're going to go ahead and spot them first, the last 30 years of the 19th century too. This is what I mean by we let people feed us lies. Why don't you just go all the way back to 1776 if you're going to do that? Why don't you just spot them that too? What I'm saying to you, brother, is I'm going to ask you one question here, okay? At what point oppression and slavery end? Tell me the answer to that.
Could you repeat it one more time? It kind of broke up between
At what point does slavery and oppression end?
I guess in that terms, I would say probably education or
No, tell me, what can you look at and see at in your society? At what point does oppression and slavery end?
Okay, you mean like a time frame?
No, I'm telling you that when you tell somebody that they are oppressed or enslaved, tell me what they should look for. Okay, when they say, well, there are some people over there who told me I'm not, and you say, well, you are, then they're going to ask you, okay, well, when will I know that I'm free and I'm no longer oppressed and enslaved? Tell me when that point arrives for a people.
I believe I can't fully answer that well, teaser. I don't have an answer.
But you do know that you can give your parents and grandparents a pass. Now, you do know you can do that. But you don't know when oppression and slavery end. But you do know you want to give them a pass. Understand something, brother. Your parents and grandparents raised you to be their lackeys and raised you to be their slaves. And that's why they lied to you as opposed to give you empowerment. They haven't explained to you why they built anything. They just give you endless excuses and canard about why they couldn't do anything. Let's talk about Jim Crow and segregation for a moment here. As Dr. Claude Anderson has pointed out numerous times before, from the period of 1870 to the period of 1920, we had the greatest socioeconomic progress that black people have ever experienced, period. End of discussion. We went from owning nothing to owning 1/3 of 1% of the nation's wealth.
Fierce.
Okay, what does that tell you then? What does that tell you? We did all of that under Jim Crow, Dred Scott. Not Dred Scott, but we did it under Jim Crow. We did it under segregation. We did it under racism. We did it under the Klan. We did it at the height of all those things. Now, if we did that at the height of all those things, how in the world do we accomplish that if the situation was the way that you are telling yourself it was?
Well, I guess so. I guess you have a point there, and I actually agree with you. I know I took this chance.
Okay, we're not
kind of,
yet.
I had a.
I'm glad you agree.
Okay, I'm glad you agree,
but we're not done yet. I'm very glad you agree, but I need to disavow you of some misconceptions here. Because every lie that we are told and then we often repeat it, we become an echo chamber for lies. And we can't let that go on any longer. That has to stop. You can no longer be an echo chamber for lies. We made most of ourselves economic progress under segregation, not integration. You to look at how many black banks that were opened up from 1880 to 1934, 35. Over 100 black banks during that time period. How many do you have today? Around 25. I'll answer for you, around 25. What does that tell you? I'm saying around because we haven't gotten the final numbers yet from the last quarter of last year. Not sure just yet. But actually, we're almost the first quarter of this year, so I want to wait until the first quarter of this year is over so we can for certain. But around 25 is all we got left. Now, what does that tell you? That tells you that when you were segregation, all that really did was they isolated us and forced us to work together. The only time you had trouble when you left your black neighborhood to go try to integrate outsiders. And that's why other group people never had the trouble we had, because Orientals, Chinese, Japanese, Korean, they come from closed societies. They are used to closed societies. That's why all of their languages have a similar type of term, gaijin. In Japanese, for those of you who understand Japanese, at least that word, you understand the gaijin basically means outsider. Well, not basically, it translates to outside. He's not from us, he's an outsider. It's not a respectful term. The point is, it means outsider. You're not one of us. They come from closed societies. They did not come here expecting to integrate anything. We have been trying to get the former slave master's approval since they took the shackles off our legs. Psychological and emotional attachment that these other groups of people never did. That's the difference. That's the difference. And your parents have lied to you and deceived you and fooled you because they wanted to integrate those people. They wanted in, and they didn't give a damn if they sacrificed you to get it. And so they told you all kinds of lies. Well, why weren't you building in the meantime? The reason your parents and your grandparents weren't building is because they were too trying to integrate these other people to get them to finally pick them on the head and tell them that you're equal to us. That's what they spent their lives trying to do. They didn't give a damn about building for you. And you go walk outside your home today, show me the black people today. Ku Klux Klan is gone. Morris Deeds and the Southern Poverty Law Center bankrupted them. Aryan Nation is not a threat to us. Segregation has been gone forever. Full of history. No plantations here. But yet, we're in the same position that we were in 1940. We have 1/3 of 1% of the nation's wealth, the world's wealth. What does that tell you? That tells you it had nothing to do with the circumstances that you tell yourself it was. We made our greatest socioeconomic progress. We had our greatest ownership under segregation. We owned way more black businesses under segregation than we did after that. But that was what your parents and grandparents were doing. They said, damn, this. My store will never be as good as Bloomingdale's, will never be as good as Macy's, will never be as good as Woolworth's. What's the difference between his store and yours? Woolworth's, damn it! And so gave up our store to force Woolworth to finally let us in his. That's what they were doing. And you need to accept that reality of it. Everybody out here, they're not afraid to curse out Jesus Christ. They're not afraid to curse out God walking. I sit up here and just question your parents. Don't even curse them out. Just question them. And suddenly people become cowards. If that doesn't tell you you've been raised in a cult-like environment, I don't know what will. Where you're not afraid to challenge God, but you're afraid to challenge your mama and your grandparents. If that doesn't tell you you've been brainwashed into a slave cult environment, nothing will. Go back and go take a look at the numbers. Go take a look at inflation and what the dollar was worth in 1930, what the dollar was worth in 1970, and what the dollar is worth today. And find out what your parents are doing. Go find out what it was worth, and then go ask. You can go do a Google search on that. Take you 5 seconds to get that answer, by the way. And then don't believe me. Go talk to your dad. Talk to your mom. Go talk to your grandparents and ask them how much they were getting paid for an hour at the last job they worked. Ask them how much they were getting paid.
Wow.
They'll tell you. And when they do, you'll be able to calculate for yourself, okay, this is what they could have done with that money. This is how much rent was back then. This is how much they were making. And they didn't leave me nothing? Now, what plan stopped them? I said at the beginning of the podcast, go ask them to see some pictures of them when they were your age. How old are you?
I'm 23.
Okay. You said 23?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Go ask your mom what kind of car she was driving when she was 33. Go ask her.
I don't think she – actually, I think I know that question. I don't think she had a car. I think she was – because I know my mother had – my brother – from her first marriage, and she got divorced.
Okay, I don't sound insensitive. I don't mean to sound insensitive at all. I got a lot of people on the line, so I really get the biography here. But you're saying, was, you said, well, my brother and she were previously married. Okay, did she get remarried?
Yes, she married my dad and had three others.
Okay, had three. Okay, we had married your dad and started cranking out kids, which means they felt they could afford them. Don't let people sit here and play you for a sap, son. Your parents first. Don't let people sit there and play you for a chump. Your parents are the first people who will look you in your eye and lie to your face. Get over this notion that your parents are somehow divinity. They are the first people who lie to their children. Go ask your folks what kind of car they had when your mom and dad got when your mom and dad got married. Go ask them what kind of car they had. And then see if you can find the equivalent of just look for the engine and look number of doors. And I'll tell you what the equivalent is today. You can go look it up for yourself. You don't even have to ask me. Go look it up for yourself. If it was a V6, then it's the equivalent of a Toyota Corolla. If it was a V8, that's the equivalent of a Crown Vic or a Cadillac. If it was a V8, I know they're down in engine sizes. Today thing, I get that, but in the V8 today, hell, there's a lot of BMWs. My point is, if it was a little old go car, that's one thing. But to be totally honest with you, that's not an excuse either. Two grown people in a house working, they should have had you kids set up. You should be on this phone today talking to me about the education that they paid for you at what state are you in?
I'm in Texas.
Okay. They should be telling us about your the education paid for you at Texas A&M. Did they do that?
No, I paid for all my college education myself. I'm in nursing school right now.
Why didn't they prepare that for you? Why didn't they build a business for you to inherit so you wouldn't have to go to school if you didn't want to go? What did they prepare for you? You're 23 years old. They had 2.5 decades to get prepared for this. And she was previously married, so she had more time than that. 30 years to get prepared. And like a kid with a science project, it's been nine months, you did nothing. What's their excuse for that? They don't have Jim Crow to blame. But there was plenty of sex going on in that house. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not supposed to say that. It was disrespectful. Telling the telling the truth is disrespectful. She got 4 kids. Well, how many? You said 3. Okay, because you said there was another brother.
Yes.
And then 3 after that was 4.
I have an older brother.
All I need is a yes. All I need is a yes. There's 4 kids altogether?
Wait. There are 4 kids total, 3 kids with my dad, and one child with the first
kid. That's fine. 4 kids all together. So what does this tell us?
Yes.
This tells us that Mom didn't mind cranking out, and Dad didn't mind helping to make them. So sex was a priority.
Well,
paying for these children after they were born, not so much. You go find that out, son. You go find out about the house they had and go look up the equivalent day. Number of bedrooms will tell you the equivalent. If they got extra rooms, it gives you the equivalent. Find out what kind of house they had. find out what kind of car they had. Go see if you get a picture of their clothes, when a picture of them in their 30s, and see if you can find the equivalent clothes today. And you'll get your answers about whether this was really segregation in the Ku Klux Klan or whether this was, hey, baby, drop it, lock it low, and come on over to my place. I think you will be quite disappointed by the answer you're going to get. This is a broadcast that slays and makes hamburger meals out of sacred cows. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Well, sir, I guess I definitely have a lot to explore. Some of the things I've kind of explored, I wouldn't be able to answer fully on this broadcast. However, I'll send you an inbox to go into some greater detail so you can understand.
They're going to be a little suspicious when you start asking these questions. So I'm going to recommend that you just tell them something that they'll believe, but just tell them talking with us about what kind of cars were available back then, and get to start talking to you about what kind of cars they bought, what kind of houses they had. Get them to start talking about back then and what we got now. Ask them about their shoes. Ask them about how nice they were, whatever. Mom, did you have a nice pair of shoes? Because these are like Manola blocks and, these Balmains. Man, did y'all have them like that back then? And get them to start talking about what they had. All of a sudden, you're going to start hearing, man, they had the bell bottoms and the loafers and the man gaiters and the snakeskins and fedoras. I mean, I'll be damned, spent a lot of money back then. I've got to pay for my own schooling. With them handing me nonstop excuses about what they can do and can't do now. Yeah, they left our inheritance at Nordstrom's and the Cadillac dealership. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Left your inheritance on the showroom floor. And you can't do better by your children if you don't have the courage to admit the sins of the fathers and the mothers. Phone lines are open. The number is 646-787-933. 646-787-1933 is your personal access code to the Blackest Radio Program in existence. The telephone line stacked in here, but we do have time, and I believe we're going to get to everybody in here because I do want to have the ability to talk to them the way they want to be talked to and need to be talked to in depth on these things. So definitely have patience, everybody who's online. I can't go all through all these numbers from the 213 and 646 and 62 and 843 and 504 and 3. Well, anyway, everybody on the line, just hang on here. Caller from the 313, you are on deck and live on the blackchannel.net radio.
Hello, Jason Black. This is Negus Boo. How are you doing today?
Black first, brother. What's on your mind, black man?
Okay, I'll be very brief because I'm a freaking caller, so I'm not going to be long-winded. I just wanted to highlight on two things. Well, actually, you pretty much summed it up with Paula Deen about how, black people in general should be infuriated how she's making a comeback and they're investing $75 million to $100 million for her to come back. I mean, that is just, I don't know, that's just mind-boggling. Also, though, you put up an article that I wasn't aware of, and I'm glad you posted, that I commented on about there being deregulations on lobbyists' influence on spending for candidates. That's very bizarre. That's crazy. So now, if they pass that where it's deregulation on spending for lobbyists in terms of the money they spend on the Senate, I'm really curious to what Tracy would have to say now on that show. When they were talking about voting and all that, and we were saying the importance of social economics and why it's important to have capital and the influence that you can have on the politicians. Like you said, Dr. Clark Anderson said, we don't worry about the politicians. When we get the money, we buy the politicians. And essentially, they just open the gates on that. And who do we have to represent us? Nobody. Nobody at all. There's nobody to represent us. Who do we have that's lobbyists that's going to represent black folks for our best interest, for who we want to put in office to pass those laws? We have nobody.
We only have lobbyists. We just have activists. We don't have any lobbyists. We don't have anybody who's staying in the politicians' rear ends for us. We don't have that. And it'd be different if we were even doing that ourselves, but we're not.
Nope.
Now, what you're referring to is right now it's McCutcheon versus the FEC, Federal Elections Commission. Back in 2002, right after the September 11th attacks and whatnot, John McCain and Russ Feingold sponsored a bill that became the campaign finance reform law. And what it basically stated was that you could not get more than $2,500, some people are saying $2,600, to a political candidate.
Right.
And that limit has held up until 4 years ago when a political committee, Citizens United, took the case before the Supreme Court. One, they had John Roberts and Sam Alito on it. You see, what they bought, paid for came in for them. And what they said was, okay, we want that overturned because corporations are people. You know that weird twisting of logic Mitt Romney loves so much. Corporations are people. Apparently, though, they're not people to the extent they have to go to jail if they kill 14 people on the oil rig that blows up in the middle of the Gulf. They're not people. Then we can't charge the corporation with manslaughter, but it's a person, okay? Now, McCain-Feingold, or campaign finance reform law, said you couldn't give them $2,500. Citizens United was successful and got overturned at the Supreme Court, so that was the end of campaign finance reform. And the reason it was the end was because, well, if you say that corporate, you can't infringe corporations' right to free speech, then how can you infringe individuals? Well, that Mr. McCutcheon is. Mr. McCutcheon is a businessman from Alabama who said that he gave lots of political campaigns, and he would have been more if the law had said that. So guess what? Went straight to the Supreme Court and said, we want to overturn this now. We want individuals to be able to get this important. As I pointed out before, right now, wherever you are, Walmart, for example, in Los Angeles and New York City proper, they've had a lot of trouble building super centers in those places. A lot of trouble. The main reason is because the politicians won't let them. Especially out there in California, in that Los Angeles area, they've had a lot of trouble trying to get a super center. They want to make like Walmart City. They stop that. Walmart would love to have the opportunity to build this gigantic complex out there, but the politicians currently in office won't let them. So if you're a multi-billion dollar corporation, what would you like to see happen? You'd like to see the politicians replaced now, wouldn't you? And you pay as much money as you have to get them out of there. You can build this gigantic sprawling megaplex that will have floodlights beaming and people honking and engines roaring 24 hours a day. Or if you're like the Koch brothers and you want to build a new refinery that's going to pollute the air and gag people, well, if the politicians who are currently in office don't want to play ball, you will simply flood the airwaves with $50 million in advertising, move them from office, and put in some people you can play ball with. And if you don't believe that's the way it works, take a look at Rick Scott in Florida, take a look at Rick Snyder in Michigan, you get the idea. Scott Walker in Wisconsin, you get the idea. And that's exactly what we're about to see. The rich are squadding up. You thought Obama was going to save you. The rich are squadding up with that emergency finance manager law, with Voting Rights Act neutralized. Now we don't have to worry about Negroes anymore. The rich are squadding up. Understand, every time the rich get richer, they always make sure black people remain at the bottom totem pole. That's been a consistent thing for 250 years in America, 300 years in slavery, and 500 years under racism, period. Been consistent with them. And we have no reason to believe that this is going to turn out well for us at all. But you know what I say, niggas? I say this is hell. I say this is going to be Armageddon for a bunch of people. And this is good.
Oh,
this
yeah. This
is exactly what people need, because we need some soul Darwinism to kick in here. We need some natural selection to start kicking in. Because when you and I got people sitting up here telling us that Paula Deen, the good guy, black folk, telling us Paula Deen is the good guy and we're the bad guy, don't you know we need some natural selection to start happening here?
Yep, and you know what? this is, like you said, this is a boiling pot. This is an incubator for, as Stokely Carmichael said, in order to have conscience, you have to go through struggle for some people. And this is going to be the boiling pot for some of these Negro kings, some of these people that think that it's post-racial society. They're going to see it more. There's going to be more overt than they ever seen it since the early 1900s. It's going to be right in their face. And all these people that have been bamboozled by this neocolonialism of Barack Obama being in office, there has been more attacks put on black people than I've seen damn near in my lifetime since Barack Obama's been in office. And black people are just smiling, grinning, showing all their teeth every time they see him speak on television. But there has been hysterical events taking place, and they're continuing to do that underneath the unconscious radar while Barack Obama is in office. And people, and white people need to take heed and be aware and understand that the attack is on you and it's constantly on you more than it has ever been, probably since your lifetime if you're 30 and under.
Understanding this, everybody else is squadding up, and those who plan on surviving better start doing the same thing if you have plans on surviving. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Oh, well, I think it's all been said. Black first, and I'll be listening in. Thank you.
Black first, brother. Thank you very much for joining us here. Telephone lines are still stacked here. Let's see if I can get somebody to hear. Caller from the 843, you've been waiting for a little while here. Thank you very much for your patience. You are now live on the blackchannel.net radio program. Call in the 843 live with the blackchannel.net radio program.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Black. I'm just listening now.
Okay, we'll just go ahead and put back on hold here and you can listen. Some people do that. I don't know why. I guess they don't have internet connections there or something. Caller on the 213. That's some expensive real estate. You're on live with blackchannel.net radio.
Black First BA, this is Ambush.
Brother Ambush, hadn't heard from you in a while, brother. Well, you haven't heard me in a while either. What's in your mind, black man?
I just wanted to say, Black First, to you, it's good to hear you back banging on the beast on the airwaves, and wanted to see if you've been tracking anything that's been going on over in the Ukraine and Kyiv, the way that they've been rioting over there.
Yes, I have.
The reason I bring that up is because the people stood their ground and held their ground against the opposing forces.
Yes,
and
they did.
Unrelenting. And did not give one inch. If anything, they took ground against the government, and the government was trying to make concessions, you know, for them. Well, you know, we'll get rid of this member of government. They said, no, excuse me, you all must go. Well, we'll get rid of this particular person. No, you all must go. And what do you know? They got what they wanted.
When a people are serious about liberation, when a people are serious about change, they don't come to the table and say, let's make a deal. They come to the table and say, here's the blood, the Magna Carta. They didn't go to the king and say, hey, let's make a deal. They went to him and said, you're going to sign this document or you're not walking out of this tent. It's just that simple. You can remain king, you can remain monarch, you keep your damn castle if you want to. But you don't lord over us anymore, and we're willing to take out these swords and chop your head in half if we have to make that point. And maybe your son, when he gets a little older, maybe he'll sign this, but there'll be peace in the land. He'll be a refugee, but there'll be peace in the land. So one way or another, we're going to get freedom. Now, we can get it with your willing hand, or we can get it over dead body, whichever you prefer. Going to have it. And the Ukrainians said,
right,
we're going to have it. The Egyptians said, we're going to have it. The people who've gotten freedom here said, we're going to have it. It's still a work in progress, but let me tell you, the Egyptians have made a lot more progress than black folk in America have.
That's right.
Isn't that amazing? You know what? I'm going to say something right now that's going to upset a lot of people out there, and this is going to upset you, but damn, yeah. When I take a look at what those hikes have done, when I take a look at what they do for freedom and what they're willing to do for freedom, and then I take a look at what's happening down the street in the Sudan, when I take a look at what's happening just down the street in Nigeria, when I take a look at what's happening just down the road from them where there are black Africans, and then I take a look at what the Libyans do, what the Egyptians have done, especially the Egyptians, and you want to holler up the Egyptians and the pyramids and the Hyksos and the pyramids, you want to sit up here and talk about their outsiders and their Arabs, and those are African monuments and whatnot. Let me tell you right now, based on what I've seen, those people have probably earned more of a right to those pyramids than the Africans have at this point. Because right. One of you is willing to fight and die for that land, and the other one of you is sitting up smiling and dancing jig for Paul Dean. Now, you tell me under those circumstances which one of you has earned the right to possession of those monuments. Absolutely. And that's going to upset a lot of people, but that's the damn truth. And I'm just talking about Americans. I'm talking Africans. Black Africans, not Africans in America, but Africans on the African continent.
Right.
When was the last time that they were willing to kill or die for something meaningful? And we can't think of it. We can't find it. No, the Ukrainians and the Chechens are letting you know that this is the cost of freedom, and we are willing to pay the cost of freedom with the blood of martyrs, tyrants. And black people sitting up here talking about what we won't do. I go to Facebook and my Twitter every day with black people arguing with me, telling me what they won't do, what they're not willing to do. That's too messy. That's too difficult. I'm just not used to convict. No wonder you are the world's whore. Oh, you can't be talking down to us. You're not ashamed that people are whoring out. You're not ashamed of being a coward, but you're upset I call you one. White folk can call you nigger, you dance a jig and stand up. I say you're a coward, which is nowhere near bad as nigger, and me you're ready to fight with. Paula Deen, bow down. Yes, Miss Paula. Yeah, I'm going to get that back authority. I'm going to get him, Miss Paula. Don't you worry. I'm going to get him.
Yeah, I read those comments.
That's how the Ukrainians are going to put a saddle on our backs and ride us around South Central before we get up on our feet at the rate we're going here. Don't tell me those people can give us a class and a math course in what being black means. It took their government, they brought it to a standstill. They brought the government to a standstill. And
that's right.
You're going or we're going. But damn it. This getting sorted out now. As Optimus Prime said, one will stand, one will fall, but the both of us ain't going to be here no more. And the people won. And that's why they got it and we don't.
That's right. They were together. They held their ground. And it basically ties it all together, what you were saying earlier about this whole movement going back to the, if you want to go, the so-called civil rights movement, where all this marching took place. I didn't see one Ukrainian marching at any point. They were right there toe-to-toe with those police. They made their demand, and then it escalated. They started throwing Molotov cocktails. They started building catapults. I didn't know anybody in the year 2014 still know how to build a catapult. But they did, and they got what they wanted. So you come over here and you cross the big pond in the United States, and you have two noticeably high-profile cases where unarmed black men, or three actually that I could think of right off the top of my head, three black men get killed, kids get killed, and they want to march. They want to hold up banners and flyers. Why these guys overseas, they're telling you, they're showing you, they're illustrating to you, this is how it's done. You guys are marching, and where did that get you? A guy gets sentenced on attempted murder, but we'll see. We'll really see what happens when the sentences come down. But he didn't get convicted of the actual crime. but you want to march? Then you got the Ukrainians over there in the freezing cold throwing cocktails, explosives at the police until their demands are met. Something's very wrong with that. Oh, and another point. Then you have, black males get killed in the United States and all over the world, actually, but specifically here in the United States, and the first thing they want to do is send out the, like you call them, Pastor Cornbread, all these black celebrities, and say, you know, we need to pray. Vladimir Klitschko, I don't know if too many people are familiar with him, but he used to be the former heavyweight champion of the world. He's now in politics.
Him and
Ukrainian.
His brother dominating the boxing ring, by the way.
That's right. That's right. Vladimir Klitschko went to the front line to try to pull that same Pastor Cornbread. They sprayed him in the face with a fire extinguisher and told him to get the hell out of here. But we didn't see him again.
Well, you know, beyond that, though, he vacated his title so he could go back and serve as a politician. He didn't have celebrity in the way of that, even though he may have been, depending on how you look at the story, he may have been on the wrong side of it. But the point was, being a star wasn't the most important thing to him.
Exactly.
It's the most important thing. At least I will give him that much, even if he was on the wrong side of it. People were the most important thing. But, you know, he's
right.
He lost our respect in a lot of corners for doing stuff like that, coming over here and boxing and things like that, while the people in the streets. Another one is another one was his name escapes me off the top of my head. But he was in the UFC. He was supposed to fight Randy Couture when they brought him over from Pride, and he had turned on Randleman and boy, I can't believe this is in the top of my head right now. But he's also a politician where he was from.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, these guys never forgot about that kind of thing. Merk Krokop, that's his name. Krokop. And
oh,
you take a look
European
at
how as
he
well.
Yeah, he was in the UFC, but he was a politician. Tells us a big difference, because when a black man leaves Africa, that's the last time Africa's going to see him. Especially if he goes to Hollywood sports,
right.
The last time Africa's going to see him until it's time for him to retire.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever he was doing, we love entering fake worlds. We don't have much. We don't have much patience for the real one and much interest in it. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Like I said, it's good to hear you back on the airwaves. Black first.
Black first, brother. Thank you very much for joining us. This is the home of sorry. Okay, I just want to hear here. I get a caller from the 504. You're on live with blackchannel.net radio. I hit the wrong button and dumped you. I hope that wasn't the case because I have more lines on there. If I did jump a call, please call back in. I promise I'll get you. Come to 504. You're on live. Oh, no. Caller from the 504. You're on live with the Black Nation Radio.
Yo, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. What's your name?
All right, Jason Black. My name Reginald from New
Hello,
Orleans.
Hello, Reginald.
19.
You're from New Orleans.
Can you hear me? Yeah, my name
Reginald.
I discovered you listening through Time and Show, and I'm one of them dudes that I lost my father when I was like 13. And for whatever reason, ever since I've been hearing you, I really think that you are definitely what we need in the black community, like on a major scale. And somehow we need to, as black people, help elevate you and people like you to a higher level, because you definitely, for my generation, we definitely need somebody like you, because we are totally lost from our parents' standpoint. Like, when I grew up, my father died, my mama worked a lot, so I barely saw her. so she can provide for us, for me and my little brother, which I didn't, you know, we didn't have that problem when my daddy was living, but he was killed and at the wrong, in the wrong place at the wrong time. And it kind of messed up, I want to say, it kind of messed up my manhood, in a sense, on having that fatherly help that I needed that I never could get because my father was gone. It was like up until 11, I was learning things here and there, what I need to do, what I should be doing, and whatnot. And then when he left, it did a 180. And I find myself falling into the single mother trap that most of my the dudes I grew up with fell into as well. Until one day I just woke up and said, nah, I don't like the way this is going. I don't like the lies that I'm being told. I don't like how everything getting swept under the rug that's important that I should be told that I wasn't being told. I just didn't like the route it was going. And I've seen a lot of the dudes that I grew up with die, mothers forcing them to sell rock because the mothers needed money. Seeing mothers push their sons down the wrong road a lot. And I even have cousins now that can't even get their life together at all. At all. Like, all they know is the wrong stuff. And like I said, anything you put out, I try to listen to get some kind of help and hope. Because as I grew up, like, my dad had died from his job. They sent him a check every month from the day he died, I think it was in 97, until I graduated high school. My mama never told me. She didn't tell me. She didn't put no money up for me. She didn't build no bank account for me to go to college or none of that. She did none of that. But she'll fuss at me sometimes, be like, get off the phone or do this or do that. If I asked her for something when I wasn't old enough to work for myself yet, she'll be like, no, you always want something. You don't pay no bills up in here, this, that, and the third. So when I found out about it, then she, like, did a 180 on me, told me that my money was going towards paying the bills in the house and just for everything. She just kept giving me excuses, and I couldn't understand why for years. And I think it really slowed down my process. Now, at this point, I'm 29. I work a decent job. My mother doesn't work. I have a little brother that's 8, a sister that's 14, and another brother that's 24. It's 4 of us. And I constantly find myself having to help them at home, plus take care of myself in my own home, which I'm single. I don't have no kids yet. I prefer not to have kids until I get married because going the other route just ain't the answer. And a lot of times it does get tough because it's like I don't want to turn my back on my mother, but it kind of strains my money. Like one time she did something, and she let the taxes get, like, backed up on the house, like, bad. Like I had to come out of my pocket with 10 grand that I had, but it was for me. It wasn't for her. It was my money that I had to come out of my pocket so she wouldn't lose the house. And it'd be little stupid shit like that that just make me so angry because I do what I'm supposed to do. Like, I have good credit. Working on trying to buy me a house now. I had bought my car, cash, no co-signers or anything like that. And I did what I'm supposed to do, but it seemed like every time I take 3 steps forward, she knocked me back 4. And I was wondering if you had any advice that I can get from you to help me with those problems or deal with that situation with my mom.
Well, first of all, situations like that are very discouraging even for people like me because, I mean, you're a young man who's got his whole life ahead of him. And here this woman is who's made it her job simply feed off you and feed off of everyone else. You made a statement here before about, I don't want to turn my back on my mother. Well, here's the problem. Here's the problem. The problem is your mama turned her back on you a long time ago. And I think starting to understand now. Now, just a little about myself. Now, you're from New Orleans. I'm in Shreveport. So you and I both in almost the same neck of the woods. New Orleans is a kind of different situation for black people in some ways because it's endemic.
Yeah.
You witnessed your whole life because you're 29 years old. I'm 27, but understand, brother, New Orleans has looked the same way it has since my grandma was walking around down there. Black people weren't built nothing. What does this tell us? Now, you're 29. You got a younger brother, I think you said, is 14, and one is 8.
I have my little sister is 14. My little brother is 8. My oldest little brother, he's 24, which he moved out as well. And I'm proud of him, even though he have a child, which I was upset with him because I told him, wait till you get married. Like, you don't need to go the route. Let everybody else go on because that's a depressing-ass route. You got women that get mad at you and try to throw you on the child support just because she angry, regardless of how good of a father you are and things of that nature, and it just slows you down.
Yeah, you're supposed to be about building, but see, he doesn't have anything, so because he doesn't have anything, he doesn't feel like he has anything to lose. Now, a switch is going to flip for him here in about 5 years. In about 5 years, he's going to start getting money, wanting to get his money together and getting his stuff right. And that's when the switch is going to flip, and he's going to be like, damn, I got this kid and this damn hood rat is up in my pockets. And that's when he's going to get really upset. But it's not late to be worrying about then. The time to be worrying about that is when we're sitting up here trying to be this ghetto Lothario. But, you know, in your case, your brother, to be totally honest with you, and I'm going to say this to you now, if it was me, damn the house. And I know what you're saying, and I know it's a lot of conflict going on in yourself, but here's the thing, brother. New Orleans, you know, there's too much country thought goes on, and too often, you know, country thought is okay. Country thought is all right when your family adheres to the code. Your mother has been adhering to the code. Your mama has been playing by whorehouse rules. And she's making children victims of whorehouse rules. At some point, you need to recognize that you are not helping your mother by bailing her out. You're not helping her. You're hurting her. Because she has never been demanded to grow up. And every time that you, your dad, the man she was laying up with, family members, every time someone swings in and plays Captain Save-A-Ho, you all are robbing her of the opportunity to finally be accountable for actions and grow the hell up. My advice to you, brother, is you got a life to be building. You can't sit up and be dropping $10,000 on taxes. You can't be doing that. You can't be doing that. Well, I'm saying don't tell her nothing. Don't tell her anything. From now on, don't you say nothing.
Nothing.
Brother, the time talk is over. You're 29. It's been over.
Yeah.
It's been over. You got nothing else to talk about. She's a grown-ass woman. And I'm going to say this the way I'm going to say it because it's just damn true. If she knew how to bend over and get pregnant, she knows how to be an adult. And what she's looking for is somebody to swing in and give her that deference that she sees more honorable women getting. And what I talked about last night, that we black people like to beg for what we need and buy what we want. We want to buy our reward, enjoy the reward now, but we don't want any of the work or the labor necessary to maintain those rewards or to properly earn them. Now, if she could bend over and get somebody to get her pregnant, she knows how to get her life together. She knows. And she's going to play pitiful, woe is me, and whatnot. You need to understand that at some point, you're no longer helping this person. She's your mother. I understand that. There's a psychological system, and I'm sorry about that because that's the worst thing possible that someone can do to children. But I'm telling you, you are harming her. You're hurting her. You're not helping. Maybe what she needs is to leave the house. maybe that would be the wake-up call that rings the bell that you've taken it too far, burned too many bridges, that your son can help you, but he refuses. What did you do to him that makes him want to help you? Of course, she tried to say, I ain't even nothing around. I have to stop your damn lying. But it's very easy to lie to people when you got a roof over your head. Do you understand what I'm saying to you?
Yeah.
Very easy to lie to the world when there's a roof over your head. Let's take that roof out from over your head, and let's see if you can continue lying to people now. I'm telling you, the lies are going to stop when you do that. But you don't owe your mother a thing. Did you get that?
Yeah, that's the thing that's conflicting me. It's not necessarily her, because she my mama, but I get in her shit. It's more so that my little brother and my sister. And I guess you could say that's her trump card.
Okay, let's stop that. Stop that. Is your mother on public assistance? Say yes.
Well, actually, she's not. She was married.
If she's not working, how is she paying for these kids in the house?
She was married. Her husband died. He was a police officer. So she actually get a check every month for him. My father, he died as well. My daddy was both of them were killed in a line of duty, I guess you could call it that. And she get a check every month from him. She don't really get no assistance, but I'd be like, and I told her, I said, man, if my little brother and sister wasn't here, I wouldn't help your ass. I told her straight up, I said, I would not help you.
Here's what you need to do, okay? I'm a firm believer that when I walk into a situation, that I'm a firm believer in disarming people, okay? I'm a firm believer in disarming them. If your younger siblings are her trump cards, it's time to burn her trump cards. Just prepare yourself to take them in if you need to. But don't let her sit there and hold them over your head anymore. Don't let them be the reason that you sabotage your life. That youngest one is 8 years old. Do you know what that means? It means you're 29. That means that if she keeps holding that child over your head, you'll be 39 by the time that child is grown. Now, do you really want to be 40? Having the same conversation that you were having when you were turning 30? Because that's what she's about to do to you. She's already screwed off her own life, and now she's getting ready to do yours. Because these people are vampires. They're vipers. They're bloodsuckers. They're leeches. They destroy everything around them, and then they suck the blood out of everybody else and get you to stay there because they tell you familial ties when they're really just taking advantage. This is your choice now. But I'm telling you, she's not changed on her own. She's shown you that. She gets checks. She could have paid taxes. She's doing things. She's doing drugs. I don't know if she's gambling. I don't know if she's hoeing. I don't know what she's doing. I do know that she is not a parent. And maybe it's time that she get disarmed. But if you go off and pay an outrageous amount of money, I wouldn't give her another penny. Not for a light bill, an electric bill, for a glass of water. I wouldn't give her anything. It's time to show her that you really will turn the spigot off. You really will turn it off. And let be her wake-up call. When she gets kicked out of that house and they come and take it, or whatever they're going to do with it, because $1,000 in taxes, that must be a mansion you're in. Probably not a mansion. That means the taxes have been piling up for years and years and years, because Louisiana doesn't really charge a lot in taxes. If it's been piling up like that, means it's been going on for a long time, and she just hadn't been paying it, which means she's spending her money on something else. I don't even need to get business, but based on that alone, we know something else is going on, and you don't have to tell about it. Now I know something else is going on. She wants to spend her life and her money doing whatever she's doing. That's okay. You be prepared to take in your siblings and leave her to her own devices. Whatever is going to happen next is going to be what's going to happen next. But, dude, you got to be thinking about saving yourself now. You spent all this time and all this energy and all the effort and all this bloodshed and all these tears on, say, another person who doesn't do this. But that's my mom. You know what? At this point, I'm sorry to say it. You lost your father. You lost your mom a long time ago, too. And I don't know if she'll ever be back.
And that's but exactly the how the fuck I feel. So.
The sooner you accept that reality, the sooner you can get on with your life and stop waiting for a homecoming that's not coming. Find some people with sex and just let your mom be your mom and just accept the world for what it is and get on with your life, because you can't spend the rest of your days trying to save someone who does not, who is comfortable being where they are. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
I just want to tell you thank you and appreciate that, and just keep doing what you're doing. Keep making them videos. I'm glad that the show back on. So when I saw it, I got excited, and I just had to call in to see what it was about. Appreciate you.
Let your friends and everybody know that you found that even in the home for intelligent black discussion and conversation and some brutal, honest, real talk, because we don't play punch here. We don't spare blows. We just get you straight, no chaser, and it's exactly the way you need it. Thank you very, very much for joining us, brother. This is the BlackChannel.net radio. I am your host, your brother, your humble servant, Black Authority. Telephone number is 647-871-933. 647-871-933 is your personal access code to the Black radio program in existence, the only one of its kind on planet Earth today. Join us. Caller from the 404, you're alive with the BlackChannel.net radio. From the 404, when you heard unmuted, that was referring to you. You're on live with the BlackChannel.net radio.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just listening in.
Okay. Well, why don't we just put Jack on hold here? Brothers and sisters, I don't mind if you're going to do mollies. I'm just saying, if you're going to do mollies, at least be listening to the broadcast. Cast just in case somebody calls you. You could press the number one again, I think, also. If you press number one, I think it actually takes you off the switchboard. So just letting you know if you were just trying to listen in. But that's just me. Do we really have to give people a coarseness? Caller from the 617, you're on live, BlackChannel.net radio. The real problem with the crack baby epidemic was that it led to a situation where we got a lot of people who don't pay attention very well. Caller from 314, are you intoxicated or otherwise inebriated? Caller 314, you're on live with the BlackChannel.net radio. Down the pipe, you're on live with the BlackChannel.net radio. Okay. And then you all wonder why we're in the situation that we're in. Can't even make it through a basic phone call. And you wonder why we're in the spot that we're in today. And Paula Deen can sit up here and call us whatever she wants to. That's it for us. Isn't it amazing? But we are undaunted. Caller from 646, hopefully you are conscious. In more than just fictive speech, you are on live with the BlackChannel.net radio.
Hey, what's up? Can you hear me?
I can hear, but you got some feedback going there, so if you have speakers on, you turn your speakers off.
Okay, hold on. Let me see if I can adjust this equipment here. Yeah, this is Jelani called from Brooklyn.
What's on your mind, black man?
Well, I was just able to get online, so I didn't have a chance to hear. Didn't have a chance to hear the flow of the conversation before the last person that you were speaking to.
Right here.
Oh, okay.
Did you have something on your mind?
All right. Yeah, is the sound quality on my end sounding better?
Yes, better. It was kind of cutting out on you for a minute at first, but what did you want to talk about?
Oh, okay. I guess building on just the commentary yesterday, I guess given this current development, I guess, do you see our situation in general improving or, I guess, you know, how would you assess, you know, how much more work do we need to do in terms of making progress?
Do I see the situation improving? I see the situation improving
yeah.
in parts and in places for certain people. I do not, right now it's not improved as a group, but we better get changed or we don't have a future. There are certain telltale signs that I see that are improving and are getting better. I'm hoping that it continues to do so. As far as, you know, in the immediate future, no, I don't think that's happening here. But like I say, we're going to have an opportunity to change this. That's going to be another obstacle here. I'm not sure what's going on your end there, but we're still hearing some feedback of that kind of grinding sound that makes me having feedback. So I'll let you go ahead and have the last word here. I'm not sure what's happening, but it's sure happening.
Okay. I guess it's probably just, you know, equipment, whatever it is. yeah, I think most likely I'll see if I can get a headset. So
well,
next
the
21st time I'm on.
Is going to be a time of social Darwinism, which is what I was talking about at the beginning of the call, beginning of the broadcast. But,
thinning of the herd, so to speak.
Yes, that's exactly what's going to happen. The 21st century is going to be a time where we separate the real from the phony. We're going to separate those who are going to survive from those who will not. And this is good, because those who will not were like the mother of the previous caller.
Right.
The people who just decided that, they become monsters. They become Satans. And I mean that the way I said that. They become Satans because they have children and don't give a damn what happens to them. Well, I had fun taking them. I wasn't really take care of them or nothing. They were okay for the first year, but damn, beyond that. And then they didn't stay, so, man, forget this. This is nonsense. I'm out of here. You've had children. You become a monster when you do that. And that's why we need to get to work of removing them. And I mean it just the way I said it. Thank you very much for calling in with your brother. That feedback is really, really monstrous. Hopefully we'll get that straightened out there on your end. Telephone lines are piling up here, but we are up to task. Caller from the 951, you're on live, BlackChannel.net Radio.
Black first, I enjoy what you're doing tonight, but I did not push one.
Okay, you, caller from the 314, caller from the 404, everybody, maybe you press one again. That'll actually take you off of the call queue. And should put you back on when you're just listening to the podcast as opposed to being on there. So my other callers there, you don't want to get your call dumped. So I'm going to recommend that you go ahead and press 1 again, caller from the 404 and 314. And anybody else who just wants to listen but does not want to be on the call queue, you need to press the number 1 again so it'll take you off of the board. If you do not press the number 1, in a few minutes, I will be dumping your call. Not because I'm difficult, not because I'm a jerk, but because I need to be able to see as many calls as I can. And somebody who is just on the line because they're listening needs to press the number 1 so we can see all the people who are online who actually want to talk. Stay on the board, and you don't actually want to talk, and you just sit there. I don't care how many mollies you've been doing. You're going to find yourself removed, and if you really annoy me, you're going to find yourself banned. So, guys in the 314 and 404 and anybody else who is just listening and does not want to talk, now is the time for you to press 1 again so it takes you off the board. The next move will be removing you. Caller for the 702, you're on live with the Black Channel Diet Radio.
Hello, Jason Black. This is Craig calling from Las Vegas. I'd like to thank you for taking my call. I was calling to see if you can give me some advice. I have a 14-year-old nephew that's living in Detroit right now. And when he was coming up more younger, he had ambitions on going to University of Michigan and majoring in engineering. And, you know, we need some engineers right now as far as African-American men. We need doctors, lawyers, et cetera. He decides to tell me the other day that he doesn't want to go to college anymore. He wants to do rap music. And I almost lost it. I was completely upset. First of all, he hasn't seen his real daddy since he was like 2 years old.
Okay,
his mother pretty much.
Go ahead. That should
exactly. My sister has been living with a drug kingpin since that time. So there's a lot of drug influences. His stepfather's been in and out of prison. As a matter of fact, his stepfather just got out of prison for doing a 2.5-year stint there. And I'm a doctor. I'm a doctor in special education, and I've tried to be an influence of his life, but it's like everybody kind of look at me as the cornball person of family where, you know, and it is what it is because I made something out of myself. It doesn't matter how they feel about me, but I've always tried to reach him. But it seemed like the family got in his ear. It was like, yeah, man, you're real talented and, you know, with the rapping flow or whatnot, you need to go in that direction. And so my voice became very distant in his ear. And it's like right now I have no influence over his life at all. And so I just want to give a word of advice from you. What you think I should do? Because I do respect your opinion and what you're having on in our lives or whatnot. And that's all I have to say, brother.
Okay. Well, first of all, that's a difficult situation. How old is your nephew?
He'll be 15 next month.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't pay too much attention to that right now. Everybody wants to be a rapper when they're in school. The real world comes into play when it's time to make some money. So what I'm going to say is don't tease about that. You know, if he doesn't seem like he's aimless, if it seems like he's a little aimless right now, I'm looking more towards other things. I look at a person's diction. That's right. I look at the way they speak because that tells me what they're going to be able to do in life and what they won't. Now,
yes,
if he's talking like these guys rap video and talking about he wants to be a rapper, if he's not qualified to do anything else besides that, that's going to start being a problem. The other thing is you said I have no influence. Well, if you have no influence, I don't understand what you can do. If it's I have no influence, do you have something else you can do with him instead?
I've got a few things. I've tried to spend time, sit down, and have a little small talk with him every now and then. But he
have
doesn't communicate with me.
Somewhere?
Go ahead.
You're a doctor.
Yes, I am.
Have you taken him somewhere?
Oh, yes, I tried to take him to my graduation with the family. Mom said no.
No.
Go
ahead. That's not what I mean.
We
as black people are going to have to understand. Your son, your nephew, a bastard baby raised by a bastard baby maker from a house project. If not, just be really honest about it. Now, the problem with that is that do you know how large a prison is? A prison is approximately 5 square blocks. Not very difficult to figure out. Now, how large is the average hood in America? Oh, my goodness. Approximately 5 square blocks. How many young black men have grown up in the same neighborhood their whole lives, gone to their teenage years, they go to school, they go home, they may go to the mall, they go back home, and they've never left the 5-square-block radius that they were born and raised in? Now, you're a doctor. You live in Las Vegas. Have you taken to the MGM Grand for a week? Let him get out of that neighborhood and see what else is out there in the world. Have you taken him to Los Angeles? Have you taken him to San Diego? Have you taken him to Portland? Go show him something other than 5 blocks he raised in, because he is going for whatever gets him status in the 5 blocks he raised in. Show him something outside of that. You got the means to do it. I'm not talking about getting him out for a happy meal. Take him for a couple of weeks. Now, I mean the way I said it. Next time you go on vacation, you take him with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you go spend a couple of weeks with him, a place where he can get away from those black folks, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You're on the side of the country where Colorado is. Take him to Aspen. Let him see what it's like to be in a place where that niggerish element is not there. Nowhere to be found. He can't find it, can't get near it. And let him see some folk where there's some sensible things going on. And let him know what's going to be necessary for him to do that. Okay? But that's,
yes,
what,
sir.
That's what I would do if I had a niece, nephew, or whatever, because you can't change on the line. You had somebody who showed you a place outside of those five square blocks, even if they didn't physically take you there. They got to you young. The problem is nobody got to him young, except
exactly
influences. It's not, he's not at the loss yet, but it's, he almost is. Take him out of that environment. Let him see a place that, that place has no influence over, and let him see where he can make it go. Take him to fucking Beverly Hills, dude.
Go to
Beverly Hills for a couple of weeks. Now, surely you can use your savings for that, and let him see some people driving $150,000 and $200,000 and $300,000 cars legit, because he's seeing that where he's living. He's not seeing them driving them dirty, much less driving legit. He's not seeing that there. Give him a chance to see that. The world really has to offer, and he'll take his head out of those other things. But right now, he's got nothing to lose by aspiring to do this because he doesn't see where anything else is available. Show him where some real prestige is, and then show him, now being a rapper is not going to make it happen, kid. You're going to have to come up with practical stuff. Let me show you the people I roll with. Let me show you what we live like. And once you show him that, then you need to be prepared to give him a gateway and an entree into it. Now, I can't help with that one, but you need to be prepared to answer that. It's just like in a sales call. We make a sales call to somebody, and then you tell them about your product, and then when they say, you tell them what the product is, and then they say, oh, why should I buy? Why should I buy that? Now, if you don't know the answer to that, you don't need to be selling.
Exactly.
If he asks you, how can I get one of those cars, and you can't give him an answer, then you're really wasting your time. You're wasting mine right now. If you don't know the answer to that, you need to be prepared for that, because that's what you called me for. Well, how do I get him interested in another direction? Once he expresses interest in another direction, you better be ready for that. But if I were in your shoes, that's what I would do.
Absolutely. And I'm going to take you up on your advice. I'm going to bring him out here for Memorial Day weekend.
Do you have any friends?
Absolutely.
Is she like a battle hat?
Absolutely.
Okay,
she's
built like a sack of your lady friend. Is she built like a sack of potatoes?
My lady friend?
Yes.
I don't have a lady friend, man. I'm single right now.
Okay, I'm going to tell you right now. I don't care if you got to rent one. Before you bring him out there, get one. At his age, you understand, you and I, we're all 37 years old. How old are you?
I'm 34.
Okay, well, you're younger than I am. Good grief. But, you know, it's been 20 years since you were his age. And it's been, good grief, it's been 23 years since I was his age, well, 2 years since I was his age. Now, you need to understand something. At the age of 15, he's motivated by two things, sex and money. Now, I just explained, this isn't my first rodeo on this. I already talked about the money part. He's gravitating to the rappers because that must is what? Sex and money. Well, hell, this is one-stop shopping. Now, what his uncle needs to do is take him to a place where there's glitz, there's glamour. Do you remember Rocky IV?
Yes.
Okay. You ought to go see some of the interviews that they did with Dolph Lundgren when he talked about that, because he was 425 when they got him for that movie. And he was like, they took me there. He said, and he said, the scene where they're having rise up through the stage on the floor and all the dancing girls are around and the lights and stuff, he said, that look on my face was genuine. Because I've never seen that before. I'd been in that type of environment before where you see that kind of thing. So I was really just this young kid, and I was awestruck. What I'm saying, dude, is you be ready to put the show on. You better be in Vegas. He better be ready. Go take him to see the Grand. Go take him to see the MGM Grand and the Sand and the Flamingo. Go take him to go on the Vegas show. Go show him where Tupac killed.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's been hearing about that all his life. If you show him that you're not talking out your ass, pardon the expression,
mm-hmm.
but show him that this isn't your first rodeo and this isn't new. Show him that you're not some old fogey who just don't know what he's talking about. Go take him to the corner where Todd got killed at. Well, we got shot at. He died at the hospital. Let you get the point.
Right.
Go take him to the hotel Suge and him got into him at the person fight. So he can see that. And make sure you got a lady friend with you who looks about something.
Oh, yeah.
So he can see that for himself. Now, I don't care if you got to rent a Lexus. If you ain't got one, get one.
Yes.
Because he's going to judge everything you say based on what he sees you got, because that's going to establish you as an authority. And his ability, our ability to listen to you or not listen to you is going to be determined in those few seconds. Because
mm-hmm.
he's going to make the equation that he's saying he wants to be a rapper. You know why he's saying he wants to be a rapper? Because he realizes he ain't enough to be an athlete. And he's not good enough to be an athlete.
No, he's not.
So he's like, man, I don't have the athletic look. I sure as hell can't take hit by a 400-pound lineman. Is there an easier way to get snacks and some money? Pity. All right, I'll take that one. And what you need to show him is that's not realistic, but you will not establish that by what you say. You establish it by what you do. It's going to be an expensive trip, but that's one. And you need to do that with him twice a year. You need to interject yourself into this on a regular basis so you can show him that. Because he's going to look at your car. He's going to the Vegas Strip. He's going to look at your woman. He's going to look back at the Vegas Strip again. He's going to look back at the woman one more time. And then he's going to make a decision. Do I want this? Because nobody's trying to offer me a record deal. Maybe I need to have a backup plan. You know, just in case these record producers are so lame that they don't see how great I am. Maybe you can say it to them like that. Just in case these record producers are real lames and they just don't see how super dope you are, just in case they don't get it, let's talk about a backup plan. And don't sit him down and have to be just to show him. No pressure, no anything. Just to show him. Put some money in pocket. And let him see what it's like to walk around the hotel and feel like a big shot. And then the second time bring him out, now we can discuss business. The
mm-hmm.
first time is just to prep him and show him your mama ain't showed you nothing. Your
right.
mama don't know what she's talking about. The second trip.
You don't.
The first trip is the drink. The second trip is the chaser. Actually, it's the other way around, but you get the idea.
Oh, yeah.
If that does not work, well, hopefully time and some hard knocks will accomplish it. All you can do is give them an opportunity. I think it's really great that you are concerned and you're willing to do that. But just saying you're a doctor, you have to understand, dude, telling somebody that you're a doctor today does not have the same ring it did 20 years ago. But you know that. It does.
Oh, yes.
And if I might add, at the risk of offending, what is your discipline?
Wait, what is my discipline?
Yes, what is your doctor?
Okay, I got my doctorate in special education. So I'm a professor at UNLV, assistant professor at UNLV.
Okay, you're not a medical doctor. You have a doctorate. Well, you're a doctor, but not a medical doctor. Okay.
Yes, I'm not a medical doctor, yes.
You're an academic. That's fine. I'm not going to spit on either. But what I am going to say is, understand, he can't wrap his – there's no prestige to that for him. There's nothing sexy about that. I don't care if you're making $500,000 a year. That's not, all he knows is I got to go to school for how long to get that? That's all he knows. And as soon as you say that, you're flipping a switch and turning him off. Don't do that. He's not going to make that connection. He's not old enough to make that connection. It's like talking to a five-year-old. You cannot reason with a five-year-old. What I mean is you don't explain to a five-year-old why they shouldn't be sticking sharp objects into the electric socket. You can't explain electricity to a five-year-old. You spank the hell out of them and tell them, don't do that again. Well, I'm not here to fight with you and reason with you. They're at an age to be reasoned with yet. 10, now we can discuss that. They can understand what electricity is now. He's 15. He doesn't understand practicality. He doesn't understand practical. Still in a world where the world's my oyster and put your mind to it and what you dream and what you believe can happen. He hasn't met the real world yet, so he doesn't understand what accomplishment, what you've done is. You can't talk to him on that level. You got to talk to him on the level gone.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you have to do. So reach him on the level that he's on. I know that this works because I've had young men that I've taken on just like that. When I did my documentary, that's what I did. Place they had never seen before, men they had never met before, and they started getting the point. They start getting it, and they contact me on a regular now because somebody took them out of that environment and showed them, dude, you ain't seen nothing. And I have to know that for myself. I don't ever say that to him because now you're offending him because you know he hasn't seen anything. But that's where you got the advantage because you know what's going on in his head without ever having to say it. No, use that knowledge. But what I'm saying is in case he's raised in a hoe environment, you're probably going to have to put on a little bit of a show. But if it were me, that's what I would do.
Absolutely.
I'll have the last word, bro.
Man, thank you for the advice, man. It's the best I've gotten so far. And that's one of the two words I need to say. Black
Bird. Well, thank you very much for that. Now, about your school, though, I did want to ask you about that. Are you aware about our documentary?
Yes, I'm absolutely aware of your documentary, and I'm going to contribute it soon. As you provide, I don't know if you already provided a link or not.
Well, you know what? What I really want, though, is for places people work in schools, really, I think it would be great because I know if you have a black student in union, what school is that? What school did you say you were?
I'm teaching at UNLV.
Okay, because you said it before. I don't know if they have a black student union ever, but we need more. This is going to be something that our black students want to have, okay? Friends with me on Facebook, you need to be. If you're not on one of those or whatever, you can contact me on Twitter or at my email address, theblackauthority@yahoo.com. And let me hear from you because, like I say, if we can arrange to have an exhibition of it, we can arrange to have a showing of it in these places while kids are getting their schooling on everything else, let's explain to them the environment they're actually going to be going into.
Oh, that would be great.
So I'm actually prepared to understand.
Absolutely. That would be great, man. I would definitely get your contact information. I'm going to ask you as a friend.
I know this was going to be in this documentary, this Black and Power stuff. I didn't know that was going to be there. I think it's terrible. I think it's awful. And I'm shocked. I didn't know that was in this documentary. I'm shocked. So that way you just push it all off on me if anybody has any complaints about it.
Absolutely. I'm going to reach out to you, bro. Black first,
brother. Thank you very much for joining us. You have to talk to people where they are. And sometimes we forget that we've grown up. Sometimes we forget that we've gotten older. And they're 5-year-olds anymore. 5-year-olds, they did everything you said. They've had 10 more years to grow into a different type of person. And as we found out like last night, they don't even know who they are. So we have to be cognizant of that when people are around us. Let's go ahead and open this up here. Caller from the 646, you're live with the blackchannel.net video.
Hello.
Call 646. Speak now or hold your peace. You're live with the blackchannel.net radio.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, how you doing?
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Name is Ben, calling from New York.
Oh, Ben in New York, what's on your mind, man?
Yeah, I actually had just became aware of this. I just wanted your take on this. There's this, I don't know if you're aware of this game series called the Assassin's Creed game series. And
yes. I know you're going with it, but go ahead.
Yeah, so a couple of interesting thoughts came to mind. Now, I'm an educator, and, you know, when this Nicki Minaj N-word image came out regarding, you know, Malcolm X and this nigga thing, I started to really think about how we can reach our young folks or ways in which we can normalize educating them about African-American history and getting them to honor and respect some of the historical figures of our people. And so what had become very clear to me when I saw that image was that when in pop culture, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, white supremacy is the law of the land is because we are not necessarily in charge of how our history gets portrayed in pop culture. And so when I saw this game come out, and I'm not aware of the creators or how accurate the history is, I started to think about, well, what are some ways in which we can actually reach our young people and normalize this process of, you know, disseminating our history? Now,
okay, before you go
into it,
because you keep talking about the game, but you haven't explained to people exactly what your issue with the game was. I try not to do it
right.
Myself, obvious things, but why don't you go ahead and explain to people exactly what issue with Assassin's Creed, or should I say the duration of it, was?
All right, so the Assassin's Creed is basically a game series in which the player plays a character, and they are what the developers have done is allow the character to play out this character in different time periods in history. And up until now, most of the characters that the player is allowed to play have been white. And this has been consistent with our media that has consistently portrayed white or light-skinned heroes. What makes this game very different is that there is a black hero, and the time period in which the game actually takes place is during the Haitian Revolution. Now, I'm not sure how accurate the developers are going to be in actually allowing the player to play throughout this game. But the reason why I mention it is because, you know, many young people play games. The gaming industry has exploded. And so, you know, I'm thinking about Danny Glover and some of his attempts to actually get a film based on the Haitian Revolution developed, how difficult that has been. And then here comes this game, and I'm thinking, is this an opportunity for us to begin to think about different ways of reaching young people using some of the mediums that they have already been engaged with, right? And this is just to, and I mention this because many of the media that they are engaged with, I'm thinking about hip-hop culture, I'm thinking about our people now, have not given as much respect to our history. It hasn't been normalized in our culture.
Right. Well, here's the problem, okay? My problem is that, thinking across the board here, in white society, can you tell me how many historians, scholars, or CEOs got their inspiration to do that from a video game?
Well, none. None.
Now,
that's
my point to you, though. My point is you're focusing on Assassin's Creed because, like a lot of politicians, thinking of politicians, well, when I say politicians, I mean from the 60s, the Richard Nixon fallacy. Well, that's where the young people are. The problem is it's not what the young people go there for. They don't go to video games to learn. I understand what you're getting at. Well, these media are introducing them to concepts, only introducing them to them improperly. The problem is they don't go to those things to learn. Now, can they be damaging? Well, sure, they can, to a person who actually understands it. but it's not going to be damage to a person. Now, in the case of video games, I don't think it's going to register to them at all. And I haven't seen a scholar, teacher, or anything like that just emerge from a video game. I haven't seen that. Now, are you going to let me finish, or are you going to start talking?
Go ahead.
Okay. Because, I mean, I pretty much heard everything I need to hear at this point. I mean, I'll give you your answer, but if you just want to go on for another 2 or 3 minutes, I can let you.
I'll hear from you. Thanks.
All right. Video games are simply one avenue. Television and movies are different because that they accept as a dramatization of history. If I had to choose between the two, I would be focusing on movies and television, not video games. I wouldn't worry about video games at all because that doesn't register to them. Mm-hmm. All they know is I move this button, the person's screen moves, let's rack them up. Doesn't matter if he's black, white, green, purple, whatever. That's not a learning mechanism for them. They don't sit down to learn. People sit down to learn when you sit them down for the purposes of learning. So let's go with two things here. First of all, you asked how would I do it. Well, in a perfect world, what I would do is I would arrange education in an apprentice-type scenario. And by that, I mean Donald Trump's TV show, The Apprentice. I would arrange it as competitions. I'd have black men on one side of the room and black men on the other side, or females, because men love doing the dirt. Okay, fine. I put them out there. And I say, okay, now this is what your challenge is. There's no rules to it. You have to accomplish this. You make it like football. You make it a competition. That's a real-world environment that they can go for. If you're going to teach them about Malcolm X, the most effective way is to make it a competition. Compete to see who knows the most. Give them something that they can see. Give them something that they can identify with. They identify with what? Sex and money. Money is simply gain. So introduce something in, let's make this game really interesting. That's how you reach young people. At least with a video game, they can, it's got prestige to it. Older people trying to go to these kids with them, but a dictate and can't figure out why we don't have their attention. We don't have their attention because we're competing with Facebook, Twitter, and places that can give them sex with the friends list. And then can't figure out why we can't hold their attention very long. Because we're doing it all wrong because we refuse to put skin in the game, which is why I was explaining the previous caller. Your nephew's not listening because you haven't put skin in the game yet. Put some skin in the game, they start listening. So if I had it to do, that's what I would be doing. Now, the other part of it here is Danny Glover. Let me tell you something, brother. Let me make it very, very clear to you. Danny Glover's full of crap.
I'm still listening.
Did you hear me?
I heard you. I'm waiting for a follow-up.
Okay. Every single black person out there who tells you that I don't have the money to make a movie is full of grade A pasteurized USDA approved garbage. Did you hear me now?
I'm hearing it. I'm
okay,
listening.
Now, how do I know that? How do I know that? Because I know independent filmmakers. I know that because I watch this stuff myself. Let me give you a little bit of a reality check here for you, okay? Do you know how much one episode of The Walking Dead costs?
The Walking Dead? No.
Yes.
How much?
Okay. Do you mean you don't know?
Right.
When Frank Darabont was directing season one of The Walking Dead, they reported that the budget was between $3 to $4 million per episode. Per episode. An episode of CSI routinely costs between $2 to $3 million, routinely. Now, ever since the AMC channel started cracking down on They got Darabont, which was a mistake, I guess. I don't know. People are complaining about it, whatever, but they got rid of Darabont because they wanted to lower the cost of the show. They said that they wanted him to get the budget down to between $2 to $3 million per episode.
Mm-hmm.
And Darabont was like, I can't do that. They were like, then we can't keep you. Now he's doing stuff. My point is, now the show is reportedly running a budget of $2.5 to $3 million per episode. Highest rated show on TV. Well, on some, it's highest rated show on cable television.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my point to you is, with a budget of $2 million per episode, how long is an episode? 1 hour. Average movie, 2 hours. So what you just told me was that Danny Glover does not have enough money to do what The Walking Dead does in 2 weeks. Is that basically what you're trying to tell me?
Well, I'm not sure the specifics on the dollar amount, but...
I know, but I'm just saying I want you to think it over. Are you telling me that Danny Glover ain't been kissing Oprah Winfrey's ass long enough that he can't get $5 million out of her? Are you meaning to tell me that Danny Glover made all that money making other movies and he doesn't have $2 million? Spike Lee just raised $1.5 million on Kickstarter. You mean to tell me that Danny Glover can't find $4 million? Are you seriously telling me that? Or is it because Danny Glover is an old fuddy-duddy who has sat here and run the numbers by somebody else, and he's still got in his mind an Ari Panaflex camera that he has not investigated the craft of filmmaking and said, you know what? Damn the rest of this. I'll just make an independent movie. I'll rent a Red camera. Better yet, I'll buy one. The damn thing is only, hell, the Red Scarlet is $18,000 fully equipped. Mm-hmm. Red Epic is $50,000. So you mean to tell me that he can't go get... So you mean to tell me that he's sitting up here waiting on his income tax return along with everybody else? He's all those years in Hollywood, and he's waiting for his income tax return, his W-2 to show up with everybody else. Is that what you're telling me? You mean to tell me that he, if he is that poor a manager with his money, I don't want to see any movie he's got to make. I don't want to see. Mm-hmm. If he's that poor with his money. Now I'm going to give you one more thing to think about here. Do you remember the movie Saw?
The first one? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I remember.
Do you know why everybody was jumping up and down and was raving about Saw? It wasn't because it was this fantastic story. It wasn't because it was this masterpiece of movie making. It was because the movie made $50 million on a budget of $1 or $2 million. I believe it was $1 million that they spent on the original budget for the original Saw.
Yeah,
and it made $50 million. Now my point is, so that Asian kid, that white kid could make Saw for $1 million. Danny, and they just came into the film business. Danny Glover has been in the film business 30 damn years and still bringing us excuses? But these kids are not. These children who have to account themselves to white folk aren't bringing excuses. They're just bringing home the bacon and the bucks. And Danny is bringing you excuses. Are you sure that he really wants to make a movie about the Haitian Revolution? Is Danny Glover a political activist who wants to shame Hollywood but isn't really trying to do anything of his own? And he put that out there to shame Hollywood, but he's not actually trying to get anything done on his own. This is just to make a political point to Hollywood. Because we all know that Danny Glover doesn't engage in any political activism, right? And speaking of the original Saw, who was in the original movie?
That was Mr. Glover.
So Danny Glover spent all that time with the white kid and the Asian kid making that movie and saw all the film techniques that they used, and he didn't get anything out of it. He didn't know what their budget was, and he didn't sit them down and pick their brains. They just didn't return his phone calls. Maybe that was what the problem was. Or maybe Danny is just playing the hell out of y'all. I'll leave you with one last comparison. Do you remember the first Paranormal Activity?
Paranormal Activity, yeah. Yeah, I remember.
Do you remember how much the guy spent making that?
It was pretty cheap.
$15,000.
Mm-hmm.
He did it with a Sony FX camera. $15,000 he spent. Now, granted, the first Paranormal Activity was supposed to be just a test footage. He made it so that he could go to the Paramount and get a bigger budget to make a real movie. But when he showed the test footage to audiences, they realized it disturbed a lot of people. And they're like, wow, this thing is powerful enough like it is. Why don't we just take the money we were going to give you as a budget and just use that for marketing? And we all know the rest is history, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I'm saying is if Danny Glover's been in the film business as long as you and me have been alive, and yet he doesn't know any of this, how can that be? You haven't interrogated Mr. Glover enough about that. And let me tell you, if you and me, filmmaking, than Dan Glover, who already made one movie with that BOPA, if we know more about filmmaking than him, do we really want him to have enough money to make a movie? Is he qualified to be making this movie if you and I know more about film techniques than he does? Time to start slaying some sacred cows. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
It's been a pleasure being on the Black Channel Radio. Thanks a lot.
Black Bears, brother, thank you very much for joining us. Intelligent conversation that asks you questions about things. Because, you see, I've made my own piece. I've made my own cinema. Didn't cost millions of dollars. But, T.A., yes. Danny wants to cast and extras, and that means we have to have a big, huge budget. Okay. For all you big, huge budget people, there's a little TV show that's on cable. I don't know if you've heard about it. You might have heard about it. You might not have. The name of the show is Game of Thrones. And they do a lot of fights and a lot of swords and a lot of warfare on this program, with a budget of around $4 million per episode. For 2 hours, that means eight. Do you get me now? Are you sure that this is because Danny can't find the money? Or is it because he's a political activist who's thumbing Hollywood in the eye? Caller from the 617, you're on live with the BlackChannel.net radio.
Just listening in.
Okay, you need to press 1 on your phone again so it'll get you off the key, off the board again, okay?
Okay.
All right. Go ahead and press 1 because we would hate to have to drop your call so we can get it off board here. But we definitely do want to make sure that you're listening in. Let's see if we can grab somebody else here. Caller from the 214, you're on live with the Black Channel Radio.
Hello?
Caller
Hello?
From the 214, you're on live.
Hello?
Yes,
can you
hear me? Here.
How's it going, Jason? This is Ray. This is Ray, caller from Dallas.
Okay, put down the weed if you're going to talk to us, distracting you. What's on your mind?
Yeah, man, I was just calling because, you know what I'm saying, I've been listening to your program for like a month or two now. And, you know, I was just trying to get my situation together. And I was
You've
just trying to see.
You've been listening to the program for a month.
Yes, sir.
That's a neat trick because I just started broadcasting again 2 days ago.
Well, I don't mean listen to this
you
broadcast.
You must have a
PG just...
board, or there's somebody up there replaying my stuff on a pirate radio station or something.
Well, no, I mean I listen to all your videos on YouTube, and then I watched all your old broadcasts that you did before, I guess, your channel went down or whatever, before you canceled the show, you know. But I was just trying to see what I should do, man, because I've been working and trying to get my life right and everything, and I'm just trying to see which direction should I try to take an educational route, or should I just, you know, because I've been working, you know, I haven't really had no school, you know what I'm saying, because I got kicked out of school and everything, so I just had to work, you know what I'm saying, just
why
to try to survive for myself.
School?
Well, you know, I was a bad kid in school. You know, I got, you know what I'm saying, a couple fights here and there. And, you know what I'm saying?
So
and then
you got
I went
expelled
to.
Because you lack discipline and civility.
Yes, sir.
But now you want to go, you got kicked out of grade school. Now you want to know if you go to an adult school where if you get into a fight there, they're going to take you to jail. And that's what
I mean, we'll see that. When, I mean, my mind frame from since then has changed, you know, because I was raised by a single mother, but I mean, since listening to you and other brothers like you, you know, it made me kind of want to do more for myself and be able to do more for my community.
Okay, let's ask
but,
you a basic question here. What do you want to do with your life?
I mean, sir, I really, you know what I'm saying? I don't even know, you know, because it's just been so far from even trying to think, what would I do with my life? I've just been
okay.
trying to make
you
it
have
my whole
answer
life.
That. You have to answer the question because the most important investment in this life is not money. You can get more money. The most important invest is your time. You will never get back. So before you start talking about investing your time in school or a program or a business or anything else, you need to know what you want to do with that life. Otherwise, you are just spinning your wheels. So before you go to anybody else to ask more questions, ask the one that matters most. What do you want to do with life? Now, you need to sit and you need to figure that out. Another way of saying that is what I do in my life that makes me happy. Because what you enjoy doing is what you will do well. And what you do well is the only thing that you're going to be able to charge a high fee for.
I understand, but I haven't been exposed to a lot of stuff. You know, I really don't know too much of what to do, you know, because I've never really seen a, just
right,
a lot
you
of
understand.
From
you. Do you understand, though, nobody can give you dreams. You have to give yourself those. Nobody can sit down and give you that, because that's what you really just asked. You didn't understand that's what you were asking. You were asking, TBA, I don't have any dreams. Where do I get them? Nobody can give you dreams. You have to give those to yourself. So I guess you can ask yourself, what do I enjoy doing? What would I, if I could do anything today all day long other than have sex and drink, what would I be doing? What would I do that I want to do all day when I get up? That's a good place to start. Now, the other thing is, as I told the young man today, because, I mean, you're a young fella, and, you know, you're a young fella, and it's okay early on saying, I'm not sure what I want to do with my life, but you're pretty much at the point right now where you can't use that as an answer anymore because you're losing the most important commodity on earth, your time. If you don't know what your purpose is, as KRS-One said, you need it with someone who knows theirs. Chances are being with them, you'll find yours. But you need to know what your purpose is. What are you walking around this earth for? And once you have the answer to that, the other questions you're talking about will answer themselves.
Well, thank you for that.
Don't worry about school. Don't worry about entrepreneurship, because right now you are not prepared for either. You are not mentally and emotionally prepared for either of them because you don't actually know what your destination is supposed to be. And as long as you don't know that, I can put you in as the CEO of any company you want to be in, and the board of directors and the shareholders will vote you out in 90 days because it will be clear to them you don't really know where you're going to take us because you don't know where you're going. Now, how old are you?
I'm 23.
Okay. You're 23, and you're not sure what you want to do with life. I got a question for you. How long do you think you have to figure that out?
I'm not even sure. I mean, I don't have any kids.
You don't have any time left to figure that out. Your competition is not the brothers on the street corner that you hang with. Your competition is white kids, Asian kids, Arab kids, Latino kids that you don't even know. That's your competition. You need to figure out what you want to have in this life. You want to figure out what you want to be. You need to do some reading, do some dating. What city exactly do you live in?
Dallas, Texas.
Okay, well, I used to live in Dallas. Greenville Avenue. Hello.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I'm not lying. Now you know I'm not lying.
Yeah.
The gallery in the Arena. Now you know I'm not lying. Okay.
Yeah.
What I can say is you see the Mexicans taking over. Now, do you think you've got another 5 years? How much opportunity do you think you're going to have in 5 years? You think you got 5 years to dope around and bump around and figure yourself out? Okay. You keep doing that because you're missing them. Maybe what you need, like I told a couple callers ago, maybe what you need is to spend some time away from Dallas. Maybe you need to go to some place and go see a place that you haven't been before. Have been to Miami. I'm a good part of Miami. Maybe you should care. Go up north and go see New York. See what brothers are living like up there. Just take a week off. Go, because when white folks go on vacation, go someplace. They go on vacation. Negroes go on vacation and start sprucing up the house and cut the lawn.
Yeah.
Take your ass to Malibu. Go see something. And once you start desiring something, to have something, then start desiring how to get there. My suggestion to you is go to Dallas for a little while and go see some places. Get out of there, because obviously being there is not inspiring you to do what you need to do. And I've been there. I've been all over the United States. And the worst thing that can happen to you is you go to a place that leaves you stagnant. Get out of there. Because you're in a prison. Prison that lets you roam the freeway. Get out of there. And Draco just said it as well here. For God's sake, meet some new people. Because obviously the people that you're hanging out with, they're not inspiring you or influencing you to do better either. Meet some new people.
Yes, sir.
Some folks you're hanging with are not doing anything for you. That includes your family. Get away from all of them. Cut them off. Cut them off tonight. Are you talking to me on the cell phone?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Who's your carrier? AT&T?
T-Mobile.
Okay. Call T-Mobile in the morning. Change your number. Do not tell your family. Or your friends. But these people are not doing you any good. Because if they were, one of them would be encouraging you in the right direction. None of them are doing that. None of them.
Yes,
when was the
sir.
Last time you said you're working, correct?
Yes, sir.
When was the last time your family, anyone in your family borrowed money from you?
I just recently let my brother come stay with me.
Okay. When was the last time you borrowed money from him?
I don't remember the last time.
Okay.
Do
you get my point? Do you get my point now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm going to leave you with this one last thought. Your life is a football team. Okay?
Yes, sir.
Your life is a football team. You are the coach, the general manager of that team. You're like Don Elway. I guess he coaches the GM. Oh, he's not the coach, he's the GM. Watch football, but I'm giving this ball an analogy anyway. Your life is a football team, and you are the coach and general manager. And What do you do when you have a football team and your quarterback is Jamarcus Russell? What do you do? You know who Jamarcus Russell is?
No, sir.
Okay. He played Raiders. He came from LSU. I'm sad to say I'm from Louisiana. He came from LSU. He got drafted by the Raiders. They paid him an obscene amount of money. He put on 50 pounds and basically was probably the biggest bust in the NFL of all time.
Yeah.
When you have Tony Romo on your team, what do you do? When you have Jeff Blake on your team, what do you do? When you have a Jim Everett on your team, what do you do? When you have a player on your team who is no longer producing, what do? You cut him from the team. It's nothing personal. I didn't get a team so I have friends that I could lose with. I got a team so I have people I can with. Don't sit up here and keep people on the team and they're losing. You don't do that.
Yes, sir.
You don't keep people on your team who are causing you to lose. You cut them from the team. Mom, I love you. We're cutting you. You can't cut me. I'm your mother. Watch me. I can get a new mom anyway. Watch. Brother, I love you. I'm cutting you from the team. Cut, got no team. Whose couch is that? Yeah. Well, that's my team. I'm cutting you from the team. Not to be a jerk, but because you understand that you don't have forever. You need to start treating them like that because they'll be happy to be broke and keep you with them for the rest of your life. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Thanks for the advice, man. Black first.
Black first, brother. Thank you very much for joining us here. We're going to take these last few callers in here. Caller from the 3-4. This better not be a repeat call. You're on live with the Black.
No. How you doing, Jason Black? This is Alabama from Tracy and Friends last week.
Alabama, welcome to my broadcast. What's on your mind, brother?
Not much. I posted one of your videos about Barney's in New York, and it just really led to a heated debate, and I just, you know, sometimes you can tell people's stuff, but a lot of times people get so concerned about package or the way things come, and it really bothered me because I felt like the message was what I was trying to convey, and I even expounded upon it, but people get so caught up into, the guy that did the video, he was insulting people, and I was like, you know, what difference does
okay,
it make?
Let's put a few things there first, okay? And I need to do some quick housekeeping right quick here, so give me just a moment. But you said you posted the video. Did you, like, have a name that you posted it under or something? Because
I just posted it. This is a while. This is before I even had you on the show. I actually had Tracy play that video. And that's why she plays your video, and that's why I told her, she said she was going to try to reach out to you. And I was like, yeah, that's my boy. I like a lot of his videos and stuff. So that's what led to it. But before that, I never really got a chance to talk to you because she muted my mic that day. But, I got into a big debate about it, and my brother called and was like, you know, well, maybe you need to watch it because he is a little harsh. And I was just like, you know, sometimes people need that. You need that kick in the butt sometimes. That's how I feel about it. Yeah, I think that's the problem. We want people to come to us and baby us, and we want people to kind of come in and be so, I don't know, just soft. And I just don't, I don't think, I mean, if you got a pit of vipers coming in your front door, you know, I wouldn't worry about the ant bed at the back door. I mean, you can get rid of ants, but, you know, a taipan coming in your front door and he bites you, that's it for you. So,
well, even more, let's give you a different explanation here. If you have a rabid dog at your front door and I show up and I shoot the dog in the head with my 22, are you going to complain about how loud the 22 was?
No.
It's essentially what they're telling you. Well, yeah, you got the right answer, but I don't like the way he delivered the answer. What that really tells you is that they don't want answer. Like the situation like it is. Let's be very, very clear, very, very blunt about something. There's only about 10% of black folk alive today who get it. Everybody else is just drifting around. Can we be clear about, can we just be honest? There are about 10% of the black people who can think and act for themselves. About 10%.
I agree wholeheartedly.
So most of these people didn't like the video because they were the people I was talking about. That's what they were taking.
You know that guy that you got into it with, South Carolina, the guy that was like, I'm not black, I don't recognize.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
My thing is this. My thing is, to me, out of all the stuff you said, it's almost as if that's all they heard was that, you know, the little small little innuendos instead of, you know, my thing is, look at the whole thing, judge it for what it is. I don't agree with, there's nobody I agree with 100%. Nobody. So that's the thing. It's like people get so caught up into, you got to get, you know, even some of these hotel brothers I talk to sometimes, brother, you got to get it. Like, then you talk to another brother, they contradict each other, and they all, like, that's, you know, we always, as blacks, we have so many facets of,
there's a reason for that.
Politics.
There's a reason for that. The reason that they contradict each other all over the place and salmon each other while they're running around like the Keystone Cops is because nobody keeps score.
Yeah.
Do you understand that? Nobody is keeping score. Nobody is holding these people accountable for what they're wrong for. In football,
you're
if
right.
You throw an interception, the other team scores. Guess what? We kept score. They make a touchdown. We kept score. You screwed up, Peyton Manning. You threw that ball to him. And we know that that's wrong. You can say that and that you did everything wrong, that you did it correct, and there was no problem all you want to. He wouldn't have made a touchdown if you were correct. You messed up, and we know because of keeping score. And do you notice that the people who most don't want to keep score, most want to talk about history and esoterica, all that nonsense, those are the people who never want to discuss money. The people having the most bastard baby never want to discuss money. They never want to discuss a mechanism by which you can keep score and find out if this person really does know what they're talking about or they're full of garbage. They don't ever want you doing that.
You know, one thing I kind of noticed, I've been called an Uncle Tom or whatever because of I have unpopular beliefs, whatever. But my thing is, if you go back and look at what they call house Negroes back in the day, the house Negroes tended to be the one that wanted to stay on the master's plantation because of his resources. And the field Negro was the one that I felt like wanted freedom. But when you left the plantation, nothing was guaranteed to you. You could die because you could starve. You had to get your own shelter. You had to get your own clothes. So to me, freedom comes with having financial independence. And it's just common sense to me. I just don't see how anybody could refute that. That's why I'm for black empowerment. I can care less about your political leanings as far as Democrat or Republican. And that's the thing. I consider myself conservative, but at the end of the day, I'm like, where does the cart meet the road? Like, if I can't control the economy in my own community, then I'm going to be tossed to and fro by any whim of whatever somebody wants to say. So, you know, but I'd be called a house nigga just because, you know, and I'm sitting like, no, not necessarily. I think it's the other way around. You know, that's just me.
Okay, well, let me explain something to you, okay? I'm going to give you an edict tonight, and I want you to get this with you here. And if you ignore it, then you just ignore it. It's you. from now on, for the rest of your life, I don't want you wasting any more time with people who are not producing. I do not do this broadcast as a way of convincing people who do not want to produce that they should produce. I hold it up as a beacon for the people who are already producing or want to produce to say, over here, brother, this is where we congregate. But I'm not trying to curse or convince anybody that it's time to build. Don't waste your time with anyone who's not already on board. You found the haven of intelligent black thought. You heard my broadcast, heard my videos. This is a place where you need to be. You'll find kindred souls here. But understand something. Don't waste another second of your life with people who are not producing. See everybody that you meet as a running back, a defensive lineman, or a quarterback. And then ask yourself, are they producing for me? You would never even consider putting someone on your team who told you, well, I don't play, I don't work on Sundays or Mondays. Could you imagine being a football team owner or a coach with someone who told you, I don't work on Sundays or Mondays? Would you even interview them any longer?
No.
Hell, would you fly them down to Alabama? You got one of the strongest football programs in the country. You all wouldn't waste time with a high school athlete who told you all that he doesn't work or play or anything on Sundays or Mondays. So, on Sundays, all day on Sunday and on weekday evenings. He does not play ball on Sundays or weekday evenings. You'd be like, well, we can't use you at all. So glad we spend the plane fare to bring you down here. And that's the way it is. When you're talking about getting free and somebody else is talking about being comfortable on the plantation, he just told you, I don't work on Sundays or weekday evenings. Well, thank you very much for not having to waste my time. Let me get you out my cell phone and block you on Facebook. And I do it daily. I do it daily. People can sit here and count down to when I'm going to start blocking people. I remove people from my friend list daily. I block people daily. Power is not exclusive. I've got 4,000 friends and followers on Facebook. And let me tell you, I really think I have about 3,900 too many. I think I got about 3,900 too many.
Mr. Black, you know, the next day after you got off, I called back, and the guys were like, because I was kind of like speaking for you on your behalf, and they were just talking about, well, why can't, you know, the white community get involved on this have a certain dialogue? And I kept saying, I said, you know, we don't need a dialogue. It doesn't have to be us talking to you guys. He's like, well, it comes off a certain. I'm like, well, we shouldn't concern ourselves as African Americans. Like you said, we should be unapologetic about it because Asians are.
You know, you never hear Asian people say that, you know, as if we're not including some black in this conversation.
Exactly.
You never hear Jewish people get together at the synagogues and say, why can we not include some blacks in this conversation? You never hear Arabs, why can we don't have more blacks? Why don't we have any blacks in the conversation? You never hear that. Black people are the only people, and the first ones we go to are white folks. Black people get together in a group, and the first look around and say, well, how are we going to accomplish anything? I don't see any white people here. How are we getting anything done? We don't have white people to sign off on us. We're the only people who are looking for a pat on the head. The only ones. And then can't figure out why we can't get anything done. Because not only are we looking for a pat on the head, we're looking for their approval and their permission. Well, are they ever going to let you do anything that does not empower them? Are they ever going to let you do – you can do things that empower you, but they're going to let you do anything that empowers you if it leaves them out of the loop. And that's just called interest. Why would he sign off on something for you that has nothing in it for him? Why would he do that?
Mr. Black, I was in the mall yesterday, and that in Montgomery, Alabama, it's supposed to bus boycott a lot of black people. My mom and all of them did the bus boycott. So you would think that it would be a very, you know, proud group of people. Two things I noticed. Number one, I went to this, I walked by the sports store, and on the front they had Jordan Retro 10 sold out. Of course, it's tax season, so I took a picture of it. Then I went and I walked in this embroidery. We have this new store, it's an embroidery store. So I walked in, saw this African-American girl sitting up front, and she was doing some stuff in the back. So I said, well, is this your store? And when I asked her, this Korean lady, because, you know, we got this Hyundai plant here, I guess she got, what did you say? Like, with a real funny attitude, like, I guess she got offended because I asked. And I just thought, I was like, these people, these Koreans come over here, and it is, they are at war. They're coming in. Yeah, they sell out our stuff, and they talk to us, but these people can't, they don't like us, and they look at us like we are at war. And when they see someone come in that thinks like you or me, we're enemies. We're the enemy to them because they know these brothers see what's going. They know that we're committing warfare by coming into your communities because, what, Montgomery's on the census is one of the most densely populated African-American cities in the United States, just like number 8 or something like that, 70% black. But
you gotta miss
these people come in, and they hate our guts. And when I asked them who owned the store, she was really offended by the fact
you
that I had the audacity.
That was a misnomer that you just stated. Understand something. The attitude she had with you was not a result of some contempt that came on the boat. That she got with you was what was cultivated once she got here. Familiarity breeds contempt, and submissiveness breeds abuse. Whatever psychologist will qualify and will verify is that the more you let someone abuse you, does that make them feel sympathetic towards you? No.
No.
It actually leads to them becoming sadistic. Now they just approach you out of the gate. Hey, nigger. Because there's a part of their psyche that has cruelty is a part of the human psyche. And we don't get to exercise it very much. So when we have a place we can exercise, we go all out. We're sadistic. And that's exactly what she did. That was what occurred. So understand something. Our weakness is not making people sympathetic towards us. It's making them hostile. Now, she never would have done that with a white person if they had said the exact same thing. She never would have done that. But that's because she understands that they've got power. Because you never know. You tick off the wrong white person, he'll build a store across the street from you. That will never happen with you. She looks down on you because she has power and you not. And every word that comes out of your mouth is an annoyance. You're annoying to her just being there. Well, I'm the customer. Well, we live in a world that runs on money, so out of necessity, she has to be there to make money. But that doesn't mean that she's happy that you're her customer base. Case in point, take a look at porn stars. Do you think they're happy to meet their customers? Big fat dudes living in their mama's basement. You think they're thrilled to meet them? You are the people. Why are they at the conventions then? Because you're the people we make money off of. This isn't about love. Black folk are trying to get people to love us, and that's insane. This is not about love. This is about power, wealth, and influence. That's all it's about. It's even about sex. Sex is about
power. You know what I really find interesting?
Calls in here, but I'll let you go ahead and have the last word.
Well, my last word is that what I find really interesting is that black women will go in, break bread with these. I find more brothers that are awake than sisters, because sisters are the ones, they spending 75, 80 cents of every dollar we spend in our communities going through their hands. But when it comes to these brothers, the sisters, it just seems like they're more asleep than, and you can sit and show them videos and books and talk. They don't have an opinion either way. They just all they care about.
Do you know why? Why y'all need to listen to a real broadcast that is going to tell you the truth? women, females do not have a racial allegiance. Females do not see the world the way that you do a male. They don't. A female is not looking for the same things in a relationship that you are looking for. She's not looking for the same thing. And when it goes to the marketplace, she's not looking for the same thing either. That's why women's underwear is made of all kinds of fancy materials with designs on them. Would a man buy a pair of underwear that had crazy designs on it? It isn't a matter of whether or not we would or not. The thing is, we are mechanical-minded. First thing we would wonder is, why you want to charge me more? Why? Because of these designs. But I don't care whether it's got designs or not. They draws. I don't sit there in the mirror preening and look at myself. Different set of priorities. Black men are under the ridiculous, idiotic, myopic, and handicapped notion that women are supposed to just have an innate biological loyalty to us, and that's wrong. White men understand this. Asian men understand this. Asian women are women most likely to date outside their race. Jewish people understand this. Arabs understand this. That's why they keep such a tight rein on their women. Frederick Douglass had a white wife. That's all you need to know about women's loyalty. Women do not subscribe to a ethnic loyalty the way that men do. They never have. Women go to the man who has the most power because women seek security. Why? Because a woman worries about two things in this world. She worries about some man running up into her face and punching her in it. And she worries about some man running up on her and raping her. Those are the two things she is concerned about. What do I have to do to prevent those two things from occurring? And she weighs all of her daily decisions against those two considerations. What do I have to do to prevent that? And she goes with the man who can give her the most security. Black men can provide no security. Why is that? Because you can only provide security within the infrastructure that you have built. Please tell me where the black male infrastructure is.
Destroyed.
Do you know why? Destroyed? When do we have it?
Well, I mean, when I say destroyed, I mean the few little peanuts we did have.
Okay. If you want to know why Kerry Washington smiles and beans and white men, because they got power and they pay the bills. What are you paying? What are you doing other than running up her with a list of demands for racial allegiance? And we can go down the list. The reason that they smile at the Asian war is because black men haven't built one for them to smile at. You build a store where they can smile in it, and they'll smile in it. But you want them to give you racial allegiance with no benefits. Women respond to rewards. And black men are the only idiots on the face of the planet who are trying to circumvent this natural inclination of women. They respond to rewards. And black men trying to get women to respond without rewards is as ridiculous and ignorant as black women to get black men to respond without sex appeal. With my belly hanging over my waist. Don't you want a real woman? You're a real big woman. Yeah, well, you a lame nigga. That's who he is. She wants your allegiance without sex appeal. You don't feel like you're with a woman. You feel like you're with another man.
I know.
Any of the properties that engender femininity, but she got a laundry list full of complaints and demands to drop on you. So it's got nothing to do with black women having a natural inclination outside the race. It is just simply that women as a species do not have a natural inclination to their ethnicity. Men are protectors and providers, emphasis on protectors by nature. That is why we are tribal by nature, because tribalism is what protects our people, nurturers. And a nurturer needs a place where people ain't shooting at him with arrows and guns, bombs. Which means she's going to go for the man who can provide her the most security against dangers. And this society's security starts with your finances. And we've been trying to circumvent that. I'm going to go ahead and get a couple more callers in here, but thank you very much for checking in with us. I've got a few more minutes here. I'm going over. I'm way over, aren't I? Yeah, I am way over. But you know what? That's okay, because this is the BlackChannel.net Radio. I'm your host, the Black Authority, and bending some rules and breaking others is what I do. Signal the phone calls. Call from the 404. You're on the line with the BlackChannel.net Radio.
Yeah, this is Tyrone. How you doing?
What's on your mind, Black man?
Man, I was just wondering when niggas like you gonna evolve into humans. You know what I'm saying?
That's the pretty bad way.
'Cause you're a bunch of dumb fucking niggers. I hate all niggers. Niggers tongue my anus.
You're not niggers talking like that. Anus.
Yeah, when you're gonna evolve into a human, nigger?
Interesting. Tyrone is off his meds. His telephone number is 404-480-0370. That's his telephone number. Tyrone apparently has a lot on his mind, just not a lot of intelligence. So why don't a few of you give him a call and let him know that we would like to find out more about him joining the human race, since he has just demonstrated to us that he is completely unfit to be a part of it. I'll go ahead and put the number in the chat room for you all there. His number is 404-480-370. That's 404-480-0370. Call him. Call him late. Caller from the 6-1, you're on live with the BlackChannel.net Radio. Caller from the 6-6-1, last call, you're on live with the BlackChannel.net Radio.
Hello?
Hi.
Oh, hello. TBA, this is Lena calling from London.
Wow, I didn't ever think to hear from you, huh?
I find this broadcast to be a breath of fresh air, really. I'm glad I got through, and I'm glad to hear that your documentary has come to fruition, and I can't wait to support it.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to hear that, and I want other people from around the world to have taken interest in this also, because this is going to be something very, very important for you. You're all definitely going to want to have an opportunity to have that. And we definitely want to have an opportunity for you to join us for that as well.
Yes, well, it's really important. It's a pity that there's not that many of us that are like-minded on this subject. It seems very difficult for people to just admit that they're black these days, but that's another story. Yeah, this topic really struck a chord with me. I was actually listening, falling asleep, before the broadcast came on, and when you said that this was important for young people to hear, I got out of bed, so I'm wide awake now, and I'm glad that I've listened. The caller from New Orleans really caught my attention, because unfortunately that mentality amongst the previous generations is all too common, even across the pond. I'm 19, and despite doing all the right things at school, it seems that previous generations in my family didn't step up to the plate, so I'm making up for that. I just wanted to call in and let you know that you do have interest from people like myself outside of America, and your message isn't going completely ignored. Just wanted to say that, really. keep doing what you're
doing. Now, what time is it where you are?
It's approaching 4:30 in the morning.
Okay, so it is way early in the morning over there, and you have definitely wanted to get in touch with them. Thank you, because I appreciate that. You're my faithful people on Facebook. I know Lena, of all people, know you. And very, very slender, so she doesn't even need 4 months till June, which is very, very helpful. You all need the Sermon of Freedom more than a lot of people do, because you have a real dire situation over there. I mean, it is really, really bad and really, really dire. And here in America, they're squatting up on us at 13%. Y'all are only 7% of the population, and they're already squatting up on you. That's a bad, bad, bad situation to be in. And nobody's got mercy at this point. Nobody.
Yeah.
But you have an opportunity here to contribute on all this, and I want you to do so, and I want others to do so as well, because this will be an opportunity for you to help spread this kind of thing, to help get black media out there that talks about this, and who knows, maybe in the future we might go there. You know, we might do some footage over there in the future. This is a worldwide issue, but it starts in the United States, but it's worldwide. So I definitely want you to have an opportunity to join us on that. And I want to thank you for giving us a call tonight, Lena.
Thank you.
Thank you, man, for joining us. This is the BlackChannel.net radio. This is the only place in the world where you can hear intelligent black people speaking these things. I'm going to take a couple of more callers before we head out of here, because I can't get to everybody. I don't know what's going on. Blow up, they go down, and then they blow up over again, which I guess is okay. For those of you who are not aware, of course, the documentary, we have finished up on that. The next documentary is 7 a.m. So when you see in places talking about 7 a.m., you know what I'm referring to. If you're black and broke, it's time to wake up. And it begins with everything you do after 7 a.m. It's got the most prestigious list of people that you've ever seen in your life. Morris Levin, Shamar Blakely, Umar Johnson, Alayla Bundles, Brett Pulley, Dr. Claude Anderson, Don Peebles of the Peebles Corporation. So definitely that's going to be something in particular that you're going to want to keep in mind as far as keeping up with that. This documentary is going to be groundbreaking. It's going to be historic. It's going to be like nothing else that you've ever seen. So definitely you want to be a part of this. And also I'll be giving opportunities for people who want to invest in it. If you want to exhibit, you're going to have the opportunity to buy in. That's right. You're going to have the opportunity to be an exhibitor for it. And you'll be able to be cut in for a percentage of the profits. And I'm not talking about just 5 or 10% either. That's right. This will be an opportunity to practice group economics and not just hear about it. When I told you that this project would be revolutionary, that's exactly what I meant. We're also going to be kicking off a crowdfund campaign as well to give you the opportunity to contribute to the promotion of it. We're already filming and everything. Production has already been taken care of. We've already got an advertising budget, but we're now going to give you the opportunity to amplify that so we can start gauging exactly who wants to see, where they want to see it, how much interest there is in this. I haven't had anybody who's spoken this for you before. This will be your opportunity. I'll go ahead and see if I can get one more call here if we can. Caller from the 612, you're on live, BlackChannel.net radio.
Hey, good evening, TBA. This is Q Adams from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
This is Quentin Adams online, everybody. Quentin, I don't know what took you so long to call in, but
I actually called in like 2 hours ago, and I was waiting for like an hour and a half, and then it never picked up, so I just said I would call back later.
Did you hear me on the line?
What's that?
Did you hear me on the line?
Just now, or?
When you called before.
No, I didn't. No, you said you had a long line of people, so I just waited and waited. And,
no, I'm
and,
saying, did
you, know,
you hear me talking?
I did, yes.
Yes, you just stayed on the line. What else do you have to do on a Monday night?
Well, I'm actually like programming three websites right now, so I was doing that in between listening.
Three websites. You're supposed to be worried about just one. This is what happens when you're young and super enthusiastic. This is kids. What the heck's the matter with these kids today? All right. Well, there's a reason why I do tolerate Quentin more than I would most people, because Quentin was my cinematographer for the documentary. So if you all wonder why I have such incredible patience with him, that's why. I spoke about young men who were involved with the interview that I was doing, and I gave an opportunity to go someplace and see some things. Quentin knows this firsthand because he was with me for pretty much, well, he was with me for the majority of the documentary. He wasn't there for the first part of it. He wasn't there for the end of it, but he was there for the major pieces of it. So, Quentin, let's check out a couple of things here, because there are some people there over the years who have questioned certain things. Now, did you actually meet me?
Oh, wait, you cut out. Did I actually, what?
Did you actually meet me?
Yes, in the flesh.
Okay,
yes.
You met me face to face.
Yes.
You met me person to person.
Yes, in living color. Right.
Are you sure it wasn't a rubber mask?
Yes, I'm sure, yes.
Do I look like Eldridge Cleaver? Well, I guess I kind of do. I guess I kind of do. Never mind. Next question. Let's move on past that one. Okay. Am I black?
Yes.
Am I high yellow?
Not at all.
Am I mixed?
No.
Would you say that I'm a dark-skinned black male?
Yes, I'd say.
Okay.
So, somewhat, yes.
Now, did I strike you, do I have a real face? I have to ask it again, because some people wonder if I actually do or not. Do I have a real face?
Yes, just like everyone, yes.
Okay,
yes.
So we have determined that TBA is a real person. He has a real face. He's really black, and he's really real. So we have determined that. Okay. Did we go, when I told you that I was going to take you with me to go see some places, did you actually go there?
Yes. I thought you were joking, kidding, but no, you really presented every opportunity. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we went there 100% and more.
Okay.
Yes.
Did we see the Capitol building?
Yes, which was amazing. Yes.
Okay. And Quentin knows he saw the Capitol building because Quentin was the one who took the footage of it. Now, I haven't shown you all the good footage yet. I showed you the shaky stuff when we went one way. I'm going to show you all the really good footage when we go back the other way. But, we really went to the Capitol building. We've really been by monuments. Did we really go to the most expensive damn part of Washington, D.C.?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
God,
yes.
God Almighty, I'm not going to say where we were staying, but would you say that that hotel was incredibly expensive?
Oh, beyond. Yes, beyond.
Yeah, all I will say, people, is I know how Paris is paying for all them shoes. That's all I'll say. $450 a night, and didn't even get the best rooms either. I didn't even get the best ones. I got, like the second best. Maybe third best, but I got, like, the second best ones. I missed the ones right above that. I don't want to say anything more because I don't want the rest of y'all following me around. Did we really go to New York City?
Oh, yes. The very heart in the middle, and yes. Oh, yeah.
Did we really meet Don Peoples?
Yeah, I still can't believe that. That's sometimes I think that was a dream, but yes.
I put up the video of you today, and he autographed the book for you. So I put up the video back today. So even if they don't believe that I went, you went. Now we're going to have people say that's me. They're going to say, wow, TPA, Quentin Adam. Can't wait for that to start happening. But next question, did Don Peebles meet me?
Did Don Peebles meet me?
Did he meet me? Not you, me.
Oh, yeah. Yes, he met you. Whole conversation.
Now, all of you, yes. Okay. Don met me.
Okay.
If somebody asked Don, do you think he would tell them that I was black?
Surely. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now, do we go see Dr. Claude Anderson?
Yes, the godfather of economics himself. Yes.
Okay. Did we, just yes or no, did we spend 5 minutes with him?
No.
Would you say that we spent a lot more time than 5 minutes with this man?
Absolutely, yes.
Would you say that we didn't just sit down with him and do a sit-down interview, that he took us on a tour?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay. Would you say, did Doc Anderson meet me?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yes.
Would Dr. Anderson say that I'm black?
Definitely not.
Dr. Anderson would not say that.
Oh, did you say black or lack? I'm sorry. Did you say black or lack? I couldn't hear you.
I'm black. Oh, my God. Really?
Oh, yes. Yes, very black. Yes, he would. He would say that. Yes.
Okay. So far we've confirmed that everybody says I'm black, and everybody who would look at me say I'm black. I have a real face that's really real. I'm a real person that you meet in real life, but the reason why you don't meet me in real life is because I'm not trying to meet you. Because this is the internet. These are not my friends. They're not my family. They're barely associates if you want to get down to it. And all these people trying to do all that kind of stuff there, you notice they don't talk very much about building. They don't talk very much about that at all. They don't say very much about building, period. But then they got a lot of stuff to say to people. This here, Quentin, do you remember when you gave, because we're not going to go into the figure here because your rates have gone considerably, and I guess understandable. When I approached you about this project, who gave me the price?
I did. I let you know. Yes.
Okay. When you gave me the price, was there any trouble with getting paid?
Oh, no. No, none at all. None.
Okay. I'm going to ask a question here. We're not going to go into other stuff right there because it's on a case-by-case basis, and I'm not here to blow up your spot or anything like that. People need to call you and do business. The fee that you charged me to be with all those weeks, would you say it was more than $100?
Oh, yes. Definitely more than $100.
Would you say it was a lot more than $100?
Yes. Oh,
would
definitely.
You say it was a lot more than
$500? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. My point is, when it was time to pay him, there wasn't a problem paying him. I will tell you all, it was a lot more. The amount is not expressed in hundreds. I'll just put it like that, and they'll tell me if I'm lying. The fee was not hundreds. The fee was higher than that. But when it was time to pay him, he got paid. And by the way, Quentin, you got paid like a month before we even did anything.
Oh, yeah. It was like a prepay. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
I paid that. I paid your plane ticket. I paid for the hotels. I pay for everything else. And here's my point. My point in saying all that is, for me, that was all, to be totally honest with you, and I mean this sincerely, I got as much out of that experience as I got as much out of experience as you did. Because you're a young black man, and you're in some places. I mean, you're not an introvert. You know, I am not. But to have the opportunity to take you and stuff and say, let me show you some people who are on a different level of things, young, so you can go see this thing young, Let me take you to Midtown Manhattan and just be walking around damn streets. Let me take you there to go meet somebody. Let me show you how he's living. To show black men who are 21, 23, and 24, they're not walking around Midtown to get a hot dog. Let's go take them to some of the people with money who work there and live there, and not just work there, but own something. Some of the people who own something. This is one of the richest black men on the planet, and I'm like, you know, you're 20, 22 at the time.
23. Yes, 23.
Okay, 23 at the time. Let me go to you to go meet this man. Let me take you with him. And remember what I told you is, remember what I said when the interview was over, I said, Quentin, are there any questions you want to ask him? And I said,
yes, you did.
I said, we're here. Go ahead and ask him. Go ahead and ask on anything you want to ask him. And Quentin didn't have a whole lot to say. He had a few questions. He didn't have as many to say as I did. But what I'm saying is that I'm not just telling people what I think. I'm young black men with me and saying, let me show you some people. Let me get to meet some people and see a place outside of where you've been. Let me show you something more than what you grew up with. Let me show that to you. Let me let you see that, because we don't have any blacks from the civil rights generation doing that. You don't see any of them take young men like yourself and saying, you know what, I'll take you all expenses paid because you learned as much going on that thing, you know, beforehand. I mean, you learned things about, you know, perfecting filmmaking and stuff. And I'm just saying, take it with you so that they can learn and see some places, because you got to see what it was like to be shooting from, you know, 25 stories in the air, which is a whole different thing from shooting on the ground. Whole different thing. You can see what it was like filming inside Holland Tunnel. And for those of you who were watching the footage that I put up, and you probably saw that. For those of you who are in New York, you got filmed that inside the Holland Tunnel. And like I said, which is totally different from filming something at your house or at the beach. Totally different. It's like, yeah, that was all on my dime. Take these young people with you so they can see that there's something more to that. And a semi-good time we had by all, as a matter of fact. We annoyed a bunch of people. We're good. I overpaid for a bunch of things, especially parking. Quentin knows all about that in Manhattan. We all got an education in Manhattan. We all got educated there. I didn't know it was legal to charge people that much for parking.
Crazy, yeah, crazy.
You can park all day for $6. You remember that little fella, he walked up with no hesitation or nothing. I asked, how much was it? He said, how long will you be needing it? I said, till 12 noon, so like 2 to 4 hours. And he said, $5 without missing a beat. And you remember what he did, Quentin? I threw him the money and damn near didn't stop working. I was just so happy to find a place to park, because remember, every place we went without the yellow signs, no parking. And it was like just a few hours ago, we could have parked anywhere. And just in the space of a few hours, you couldn't park anywhere. And folks who are from the South, kids are from the West Coast, they need to come see that kind of thing. So they see what it's like in a place like that. But beyond that, you saw the street vendors and all that stuff. You saw the signs that said you cannot park unless you have a business license.
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The red, for those who have not been to Midtown in Manhattan down there in the area, they have these red parking signs. And folks who live will bear me witness. They got those red signs that say that you have to have a business permit to be able to park there. And it's only like, I forget how much to say, like 2 hours or something like that. But so basically what it is, if you're not in business, you can't park downtown on the street. You can't park on the street if you're not in business. When they say financial district, they mean financial district.
Oh, yes. Money. Money runs it.
So tell me what y'all about your experience meeting these people.
Well, wow. I mean, you said what was my experience meeting them?
Yeah, what did you think about that? Because I know what I thought about that. I mean, I was really happy about that. I'm going to just say giddy, you know. But what did you think about meeting all those people?
Wow, I thought it was, you know, make believe, you know, because these are people I've seen and you know, on CNN and PBS, and I mean, Dr. Claude Anderson, I mean, I've seen all his work and read some of his books, and you know, I never thought, you know, I would be able to have a conversation with him and, you know, just talk about, you know, stuff that is affecting, you know, the young people today, and just, you know, the economic parts. And I mean, I was just blown away. I think that has changed my whole thought pattern of anything that is possible. You know, it's, man, I mean, I was blown away. To have an autograph by Don Peebles, who is, you know, one of the biggest real estate magnates on the East Coast, and as a colored person, you know, as he is, and it's just great. It just feels like, you know, people are getting to the next level. That's what it feels like. It's just like, you know, we're actually starting to come together more, and things are changing. It's kind of hope. It's kind of like hope, I guess.
Now, like I say, because Professor Black said this yesterday, that, you know, like, first people thought I was joking when I said, you know, we're going to have to go to Washington and Philadelphia and New York and other places to meet these people. Who you go meet? Well, no, nobody, just, you know, a couple of people here, and didn't know it was serious about it. But I brought you along on that because more than that, you said something years ago, and it was absolutely correct. You cannot teach what you have not seen. Quentin can't teach anybody about going on adventures like this if he has been on one. You've just been daydreaming about it. You can't do that. And, you know, Quentin will tell you all that I spent a majority of my time when I was talking to him, giving him tips and pointers and everything else on what to do with his business. And I spent a long time doing that as well. I didn't just sit there and stuff and, okay, take a long, try to keep up. I sat down and said, hey, you know, these are things that you can do to improve what you're doing. These are things that you can do to help modify what you're doing. We don't spend enough time sitting our young people down and doing that with them. We wait until they're damn near 30 and then want to run on their faces, try to sit up here and talk to them, and that's crazy. We need to get them when they're young. We need to get them when they're first expressing interest in these things, and we need to talk to them then. If you're going on a business trip, white folks think nothing of taking somebody on a business trip with them. They think nothing of it. They think nothing of mentorship. Black folks just want to sit up here and brag about, I bought this Cadillac. Damn you and your Cadillac, dude. If all you can do is get something for yourself, who gives a damn? Are you able to sit somebody else down and show them how to get what you got? Can you do that? You know, Dr. Dre talked about that when he got with Death Row Records. He talked about that. Vibe magazine asked him, what was the difference between Suge Knight and Easy? And he said, the difference between Suge Knight and Easy was that when Easy would do things, he would go somewhere. He would talk to Jerry Heller, and you would just be Easy when he got back. He said, Suge Knight actually drove around town with me. He took me to the record companies with him. He would go on these trips, and he would take me to the meetings with him. That was the difference, he said. And understand, Dre was in his 20s, late 20s by then. He was in his late 20s and was just now getting to a point where somebody took him with them and said, hey, watch what we're doing here. He had just got that point. And I'm just saying, Quentin is a case study here. You know, I'm hoping he got something out of it. I'm hoping he saw some things. And if you all like the footage that you saw so far, like I say, that's only some small snippet of it. But if you all like the footage that you saw so far from my trailers, especially trailer number two, because it was all Quentin's work there. Trailer number two was all Quentin. If you like his work, if you want to see more of it, Quentin, why don't you go ahead and let everybody know about your company?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I do film and directing, like, music videos and film work, and, you know, my work can be found at sharpestmemory.com. It's sharpestmemory.com. And, yeah, I'm actually starting another company in the next few months for just film, and I'm going to be doing some more movies and stuff like that. So, yeah, I just got some new stuff coming out that I'm working on, and, yeah, you can just definitely check it out online. And, yeah, there's more work there online.
Well, definitely, like I say, I don't know how things are going to go with this documentary per se. If there is a follow-up to anything, if I do a follow-up project, though, you'll be one of the first people I contact. Well, you'll, as far as for camera work, be the first person I contact for it. And like I say, if we do another one like this, this time I told you to just bring your bags. Next time, bring your passport.
Wow.
And I'll say, all I can say is I don't know if they got any $500 a night hotel rooms. I'm pretty sure they got $500. I don't know if they need $500 a night hotel rooms in Nigeria or Ethiopia, but we're going to find out.
Wow, that's amazing. Wow, I'm ready. Whenever it comes, I'm ready.
Well, assuming how things go with this one right here, and like I said, when I say assuming how things go, you know, it's not from a financial standpoint. I really just mean it from a motivation standpoint, because this documentary is going to answer all the questions for me. I will only do another one or a follow-up to it if I feel it's necessary. If I feel that there's more to be said and there's a bigger picture forming, I will do another one. Outside of that, I don't really see a situation where I do that. But Quentin, I want to thank you for coming along with me for this trip here. I hope you picked up a few things about life, because I didn't just bring you along, because you could have worked a camera anywhere, okay? You already had customers. You didn't have to fly across the country for me and all over the place to get work, okay? I wanted you to come. The real reason I wanted you to come along with it, and I wanted to drag you from city to city, was I wanted to see some places. And, you know, you and me saw some places, you know, all up and down the East Coast and stuff, where, if you remember, when we were in Midtown Manhattan, how many black people did we see?
I
remember seeing one black person walking down the street. And I've been over the footage that we got, and I saw one black person. It was a black female crossing the street. But we didn't see very many black folk there. I'm talking about, I think, well, one of the cops, one of them traffic cops was black. Okay, got that. One of the civil servants was black. But you could have, and a lion, and anybody in New York will testify for me, we could have counted the number of black people that we saw down in Manhattan on hand. And the
streets, that's very
packed
true.
With people. The streets are jam-packed with people, jam-packed with cars, and we could have counted the number of black people that we saw on one hand. Gentrification is not on its way. It's there, and it's well underway. And, you know, you remember you saw the same thing in Philadelphia. I'm giving away some of our spots now, but I'm not going to do that no more. But we saw the same thing there. We saw same thing going to go see Dr. Anson. We saw the same thing in the Capitol, Washington, D.C. But do you remember, though, when we got to the hotel, other than the folk who worked there, all the people who worked there, when I say worked there, I'm not talking about behind the desk. Quentin knows what I mean. The folk passing out towels and the bellboys and stuff. These were senior citizens. They were black men. They were bellboys. But if you remember the valets, you remember none of the valets black. Just a bunch of young white kids.
All white, yes.
And that dirty bastard who hit me for all that damn money in the protect car. I'm still upset about that, by the way. Quentin, to tell y'all, Quentin, just remember, he drove off with the car before told us how much it was to park it.
Yeah, he did.
$45 to park the car. He drove off with the car before he told us what it was to park it.
Right.
Yeah, I'm upset. TVA. Yes, it's almost a year later. That wasn't your $45. Didn't you say you paid 100 times that, 10 times that amount for the hotel room? That's not the point. The point is I saw the price of the hotel room Travelocity. I didn't know. I figured for that kind of money, it shouldn't cost me anything once I get there. They got a whole different view of it once you get there. They got a whole
different view. Gosh.
So like I say, yeah. I'm glad you get to see that kind of thing too, because people who don't live in those areas, all these anecdotes, how long would it take us to get assemble all these things ourselves and to see all the things ourselves? How long would that take? DC, which is supposed to be a black city, and yet you and I can show black people places you can't find a single person. And if you'll remember, even when we went down to the historic district, there weren't a bunch of black people down there either.
No, it was tourists and
yes.
White people, and I think the people that were black were picking up garbage, like, you know, like the ambassadors of the city or whatever.
Yeah.
I think I see maybe one older black woman who was picking up garbage, but yeah, besides that, it wasn't much there.
Driving around Pennsylvania Avenue, the Washington Memorial, the Capitol Building, coming back up Capitol Avenue, Federal Plaza, whatever the hell that damn thing is. We didn't see a bunch of black folk around. We thought we were in D.C. We played like it's a joke, and it's not a joke. It's not a game. And you got to see for yourself. We take you to three cities that we thought had a sizable black population, and I can show you areas of those cities where you can't find a black face if your life was online. So, like I said, on top of that, you know, I hope it's a learning experience for you, because you know, I want you to pick these things up and run with them yourself. I want you to pick them up yourself and run with them. Don't watch me. Pick them up, run with them yourself. The things that you learned during this, things that you've been learning along the way, don't be afraid to dispense knowledge that you have gained. Not sure about everything, but the stuff you do know, don't be fearful about it. Don't be afraid about it, because we need more. Can't just leave Don out there by himself now, can we?
Right, right. No, not at all.
I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Well, thanks a lot, you know, Mr. Black. And like you said, you know, we got to do better. And, you know, I'm 24, and I've been listening to you for like 5 years now since the beginning. And, you know, I still have hope for everything, because, I mean, you know, you changed my life with the trip, and I feel like that I'm a better man because of that. And this documentary is going to be great. I can't wait for everybody to see it. It's this is going to change so much conversation in every household across the world. And, man, Black First, thank you again. I appreciate it.
And there's one more thing I want to throw in here. Because Quentin's not the only young man that I knew here, but he's one of the only ones that I worked with on this. And out of everybody here, there are only two other people on this website that have actually seen me in person, because I'm not to meet people like that. And Quentin will tell you, person, I didn't want to talk to people in person who it wasn't about money. Quentin, did I do a bunch of socializing?
No.
I don't want to talk to anybody if it's not about building. I really just don't. Now, one more thing here. I don't want to make an issue of this, and I'm not going to make an issue of this, but there are people out there who don't understand what building means, and get around to building anything. Quentin has a different lifestyle than I live, but when it was time to get business done, he was one of the first people I called. And some of the rest of you didn't get a call and even get a notice. But that's because Quentin has shown me that he's willing to produce. You find somebody who's willing to produce, those are the people that you get together with. When business needs to get done, you need product. You don't need talk. You need product. As you said, Quentin, I met 5 years ago and whatnot, and I told you it's not a game. I think you spent enough time with me to see that, you know, well, you already know. You can tell everybody else whether I talk it or whether I live, I'm preaching. But like I say, it's one of those things where sometimes seeing is just believing. And I'm very honored to have met you myself. You know, you handled yourself well on this, and who knows, man, we might get to do this again sooner than you think.
Absolutely. Well, much success. Much success, hopefully, and to bigger and better stuff, because there's a lot of work to be done still. So.
And we're just getting started. Thank you for calling in, Brother Black First, as always. Just going to end here. Everybody else, I don't know if I'm going to broadcast tomorrow or not. I'll make up my mind. I might broadcast. I might not. I don't know. I'll think it's over. I will be broadcasting again later this week, so we'll get to that when we get to that. So if anybody's got any questions about that, if you've got any questions about me personally, if you've got anybody out there trying to make snide comments and, oh, he could be this or he could be that, or we don't know he's white or whatever, he doesn't show his face, you know what? Hey. The people who care don't count. And the people sit up and wonder about my face all you want to, and you can wonder about seeing me all you want to. You know what? Yeah, you haven't seen me. Most of you haven't seen me. I don't know what I'm going to do about that. Most of you haven't seen me. The only people who have seen me are Quentin Adams and Morris Levin and Shalimar Blakely and Dr. Claude Anderson. Ask Umar Johnson if I'm black. Ask Umar Johnson if I'm black. Sitting at the top of a very expensive hotel room. Ask him if I'm black. DJ Walker's great-great-granddaughter if I'm black. Ask her if I'm the real thing. Ask Dr. Claude Anderson if I'm the real thing. Ask Don Peebles if I'm the real thing. No, you haven't seen me. Those are the people who've seen me. So kind of makes you wonder there, it makes you stop wondering why it is that I don't worry about the people who haven't seen me. Let me give you a little bit of a hint here. Maybe when you actually own some real estate, that the value of it is expressed in 7 figures, not six, seven, starting at 7 figures. Maybe when you get to that level, maybe you can come and see me sometime. And this concludes tonight's broadcast of the BlackChannel.net radio. I am your host, your brother, your humble servant, the Black Authority. And until next time, my brothers and my sisters around the world, remember, black is the future. And the future, as always, is and will be uncompromising.